Hi, I'm Liam O'Rourke, and as a disclaimer, you won't be hearing the following names as part of our plan to save WCW. David Arquette, Oklahoma, Beetlejuice, Gary Coleman, James Brown, Big T, Big Al, Big Vito, The Dog, Tank Abbott, or Pamela Paulshock. Just based on this, I think we have a chance.
I'm G. John Chase, and I gotta be honest with you, I'm starting to struggle to come up with these comedy intros. Something about I don't like WCW and I'd rather suck a fart out of Caitlyn Jenner's ass. You make your own joke, I'm not Jerry Seinfeld.
I'm Carl Jones, and as we attempt to save WCW, two things strike out in my mind. This roster's going to suffer more cuts than Julius Caesar on his way to the Senate. Number two, I ultimately feel that the experience will be much like the Shawshank Redemption, only with more wading through shit and without the fucking redemption.
And I'm Kieran O'Rourke. And that's right, folks, I wasn't fired after all. I was just working my own Eric Bischoff, Kevin Nash style inside angle that no one gives a shit about. Hope you enjoy.
This is the panel for the 42nd Squared Circle Gazette Radio, and you can hear us try and save WCW in October 99, next. And welcome to the 42nd Squared Circle Gazette Radio. I am Liam O'Rourke alongside G. John Chase.
Hold on a sec, if it's 1999, does that mean I'm 15?
Carl Jones.
Mentally, yes.
And with Kieran O'Rourke.
What's causing all this?
To do a podcast actually we've been looking forward to for a couple of months now. I've been thinking about this for a while, and a listener, Gary Thompson, also suggested we do this show where we look at trying to save WCW in October of 1999. Such an interesting discussion point for me because it's one of those commonly held discussions and things we hear about all the time, that WCW was salvageable by the time Russo came in. A very interesting premise. The first show that we've done like this where we're basically going to be doing this like it's a booking committee meeting here, trying to salvage what WCW was at this time.
Yeah, thanks for the softball, Gary.
Have we ever agreed on anything?
Absolutely, but just before we go ahead, before we move to anything else here, I just want a quick programming note for next week. Next week we'll return to the Squared Circle Gazette trials, as we're putting Paul Heyman on trial for crimes against the wrestling business, with the charge being that his booking legacy had more negative implications than positive in the long term. So if you want to get your thoughts in on where you weigh in on that discussion, email us this week at scgradio@hotmail.com and we'll get to them next week during the trial of Paul Heyman. So that's going to be a lot of fun. But getting now to our efforts to try and save WCW in 1999, just to kind of give you listeners at home a frame of reference for where things were with WCW at this time. We appreciate that not everybody was probably watching back then, or not everybody was watching consistently, or you may have just erased this period from your mind because it was pretty shit. The championship roll call, here we go. We're doing this as of October 1st, 1999. The WCW world champion was Sting, who had just recently turned heel. Oh, by the way, the United States champion is Sid Vicious. The television champion is Chris Benoit. The tag team champions are the recently reformed Harlem Heat. And the cruiserweight champion was Lenny Lane. The company was on track to lose $12 million in 99 at this point in the year. The buy rates have been cut in half from the start of the year, where they were consistently doing ones. At this point, they were doing 0.5s. The ratings were hovering between a 3 and a 4 for the month of September. There's a lot to get to when it comes to trying to save this company, trying to salvage this company. I think the biggest thing overall is that the general feel of the company, it feels like the failing company and has done for a long time.
Yeah, well, for me, the more than anything else, rather than outside the minutiae, the actual overarching structure of the company is what's wrong. I mean, the fuck finishes, ref bumps, nonsensical storylines which get contradicted on a weekly basis, on a show basis sometimes. Just common sense is the biggest thing that needs to get put back into this company, and part of that is cutting the roster because it's so fucking huge.
And that is actually a very nice time here, because we obviously, not only are we going to talk about what we would do with WCW in October of 99, but we threw it out to you guys as we always do, and one of the more common comments that came back was, will somebody please streamline this roster, cut this roster in half. So we have in fact done just that. Before the show went on the air throughout the past week, I sent out for everybody's around this table's votes for who should be fired and who should be kept on. The way that we've done this is that if you got 3 votes, you're gone. 4 votes, you're gone. If it's a split opinion, then you're staying. The people that got 3 votes or more around the table to be fired, and this is fired over the course of the next 30 to 40 days or so, not necessarily immediately, but the guys who are fired are Sid Vicious, hit the bricks, Jim Duggan,
yeah,
Brian Knobbs, David Flair, Stevie Ray, The Barbarian, Glacier, Mike Rotunda, Chris Adams, David Taylor, Villano 4, Villano 5, Barry Horowitz, Barry Darso, Van Hammer, Jerry Flynn, Lodi, Prince Iaukea, The Maestro, Brian Adams, Dale Torborg, Curly Bill, which was Virgil in the West Texas Rednecks, The Insane Clown Posse, Scott and Steve Armstrong, Al Green, Horace Hogan, Medusa, Hardbody Harrison, and Swall, who is earning $400,000 a year to do absolutely nothing.
Oh, he can hootie-hoo his ass out the door.
Gorgeous George, Symphony, which was Ryan Shamrock accompanying the Maestro, Asia, and Kevin Sullivan. And that's pretty much it. So that's the list of the guys that are no longer employed by World Championship Wrestling. So that should hopefully lighten the payload every month. The guys that got a 50-50 vote around the table and will be staying with WCW as we book it going forward are El Dandy, Silver King, Roddy Piper, Mona, aka Molly Holly, Kendall Windham, Bobby Duncan Jr., The Wall, Kid Romeo, Meng, Wrath, Lenny Lane, Devon Storm, Lex Luger, Elizabeth, and Rick Steiner, which to me is an absolute tragedy, because I was desperately hoping and praying that we could can Rick Steiner's ass, but apparently two of you, I'm not going to mention any names, G, Carl.
Going throughout this, I've noticed several of my cuts are still with the company that I'm not happy about either.
I know there's a lot of cuts that I wanted to make are still with the company, which I have to question.
Well, that's fine. So they're the cuts. Obviously, the rest of the guys we're going to keep. Just some points of debate here around the table. What do you think about these guys who I didn't put on this list, but I think it's important to mention? Randy Savage, who was on the payroll during this period of time, but effectively stopped wrestling. His last match was with Dennis Rodman at Road Wild. He wasn't invited. It was a terrible match, oh, by the way. And he couldn't do anything anymore. So I don't know if people want to keep him, fire him.
Well, as the Randy Savage number one fan and going to be the first person to fight his corner, I say fire him.
I'm up for giving him one decent chance. Repackage, cut his hair, make him a rough and ready crazy guy, crazy old, you know, the father who the son could never beat, kind of crazy tough guy. I'd give him one half chance. I wouldn't protect him compared to some of the guys who I want to protect, but I'd give him a chance.
Carl?
I keep him, but I insist that he drops around 20 to 30 pounds before I bring him back.
Out of sheer muscle mass.
Absolutely.
Okay, Jeff Jarrett, who came in around this time, a couple of weeks after, obviously Vince Russo took the reins and he came in along with Russo.
Yeah, he's joining the Rednecks, baby.
Carl?
Yeah, I'd bring him on board the Titanic.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, I'm down with Jarrett as well. Dustin Rhodes, who had been signed, and they were doing the vignettes for Seven during this period of time, that creepy guy in the window who's looking at your kids. thoughts about this gimmick? Do we keep it? Do we can it?
Gimmick's going nowhere. I'll probably send him to rehab and try and get him clean himself up, lose a bit of weight, and then I'd see where we can go from there. I think he's a decent utility guy.
Absolutely, still bring him on board, but cut the gimmick off it at the knees.
Yeah, it's depending on what Dustin we can get. If we're just getting, like, you know, fat Dustin who, like, ended
Black
up...
Black Rain.
Black Rain, basically, then you can fuck off. But if we get, you know, like, the natural kind of Dustin when he was actually, like, wanted to go, or early Gold Dust, then yeah, keep him around.
Harris Boys were brought in by Vince Russo. I'm saying no to the Harris Boys immediately. I'm hoping that you'll all say the same.
What's the point?
Of firing them, or...?
Of them.
I've been asking that question for years. I
run their car off the road on the way to CNN Tower.
That's a good angle, that's it.
Why are we even talking about them? I'm pretty certain you could have not said anything about the Harris Brothers and no one would have turned around and said, whoa, what about them?
And let's leave it at that for the Harris Boys. In terms of restructuring, re-sculpting this roster, we might as well start at the top when it comes to the World Championship. We're talking about Sting here, who had just very recently turned heel. And it was a heel turn that didn't necessarily really click. The majority of the fans were still cheering wildly for Sting. They ended up dropping this whole thing a couple of months later on anyway. He turned on Hulk Hogan at Fall Brawl. Hulk Hogan, of course, is in the red and yellow during this period of time. The NWO is dead at this point. And Hogan goes back to Hulkamania Hogan for a terrible run, if I can be quite honest. So Sting turns heel on him and gets cheered at Fall Brawl. What are your thoughts on this, though? Sting face heel.
You just got to look at the dynamics of it. I mean, you got Hogan trying to be a babyface and going back to the old hack routine of the red and yellow, which is obviously going to get booed because he got booed the last time.
He just wanted to match the company's balance books.
Yeah, I'm sure.
They're in the red, he's in the red.
And on the other side, you know, trying to make Sting a heel, yeah, he's still got, you know, the Crow gimmick going, and he still looks cool. You know, he's got the white and the black. You know, he's still a bit acting like a badass. So it's just like
he's still hollering to the crowd in his matches.
Exactly. It's like their general characteristics. Something that's hokey, they're trying to get over his babyface, and something that's cool, they're trying to get over his heel. So it's not going to work. I think Sting could be a heel. I think he could work heel, but he can't work heel while still with that kind of Crow gimmick. He needs to evolve again now that the NWO have gone.
The Hogan element is huge, because the one thing that I hate from this period of time is the fact that Hogan, who'd been like the lead heel for the last 3 years, fucking the company in the ass. Then you got Gene Oakland and Tony Schiavone acting like sycophants, and how dare you question Hulkamania, and how dare you trust this man. Retarded. Any long-term viewer would be siding with Sting on this, and they did. Across the table, Sting, heel, face, what do you do?
Transitions from where we are to where we want to go are, especially the immediate transitions, are probably the most speculative thing, really. But I think Sting, I think if you position him, say, probably a bit early for, say, Scotty Steiner, but say Scotty going after the world title as a heel against Sting, you don't have to turn Sting. You can just do your it'll naturally come within a few weeks of the story and the natural positioning of the guys and fans. I think you could a soft turn, really, for me. Just let's forget it ever happened.
We are going as we did with the firings on majority decision here. So far, I think we got a general consensus of face is the way to go. Are you gonna throw a spanner in the works here, Carl? What are you doing with Sting?
Well, I don't need to throw a spanner in the works. I've already lost the vote, unfortunately. But I'd be reluctant to immediately just drop it and his face again. Let's forget it ever happened. I would want to transition it over a 2 or 3 month period, probably peaking around Starcade.
Okay, just to get to a bit of feedback here, Rick Morris from the FEH Lounge. I think any time that there's that much underutilized talent, there's always some kind of hope. Albeit 99 had already been brutal all the way around, and the final 2 year death spiral of nonsensical turns was well underway. So obviously, we'd be trying to make sure that doesn't happen here with Sting. Nonetheless, I think a key at that point would have been to reverse one of the most egregious of these turns, Sting at Full Brawl. I'd have him do an attack of conscience, relinquishing the title and setting up a feud with him and Goldberg against a proto main event mafia of Luger, Sid, and the Outsiders. Slowly, I'd spend the next few months pushing the Filthy Animals and the Revolution to the very forefront and try to get to a point in early 2000 of who should be the next main event face to push. The biggest key would be to ease into initial changes outside of the Sting one, because the constant resets, along with the turns, were the biggest territory killers of this sad era. So this is a suggestion for Babyface Sting.
One of the biggest mindsets we need to change is looking at WWF as the competition, the Monday Night War, because what WCW did, it was on a weekly basis, was trying to react to compete and counteract what the other side was doing. That time has come and gone. We've still got enough of a fan base with us that we don't have to worry about that for the time being. It's, you know, get our own house in order and book a solid, well-paced wrestling show of, cut, as we say, cut the bullshit down. And I think that's first and foremost, that is the absolute biggest thing.
Just on that point that Rick mentioned there about Sting, and Carl, you mentioned it there too, about that soft turn, I'm all in favour of within a couple of weeks kind of making the point that, okay, Sting did this because he doesn't like Hogan, whatever the fuck, but keep him some babyface as best you can fairly quickly. There's a suggestion here from Paul Siebert from F4W Online, who said, I actually see potential in a heel Sting character around this time, so my idea is that Sting comes out with Luger and explains that he will never forgive Hogan for forming the NWO and trying to destroy WCW. He's sickened by the fans cheering Hogan and falling in line the moment he put on a yellow shirt. Sting and Luger attack Hogan, taunting him that the NWO is dead and there's no one to save him. Ric Flair, of all people, comes to Hogan's aid. Flair, okay, passionate promo saying he has tremendous respect for Sting over the years, but what he's doing now is just plain wrong. Halloween Havoc is built around Hogan and Flair teaming for the first time. Much suspense is built about the number of times Flair has double-crossed partners. The match goes on and Benoit and Malenko come out. Flair remains loyal to Hogan, but the horsemen turn on Flair. The show ends with Flair bloodied and battered on the verge of tears, yelling, look at you, you've become everything you hated, at Sting. Sting comes out on Nitro and explains that he has taken over the Horsemen, and now he, Luger, Benoit and Malenko are going to do what Flair couldn't. Over the next few months, the new Horsemen go around beating up anybody that was ever related to the NWO, guys like Nick Patrick and Virgil feuding with the Outsiders and Savage, while Sting defends the title against Brett Goldberg, DDP, Guerrero and a newcomer Jeff Jarrett. This would all build to Full Brawl 1 year after Sting's faithful heel turn. Everything comes to a close with a War Games match with Sting's Horsemen versus an all-time dream team of Hogan, Flair, Goldberg and Brett. So there's a suggestion there for heel Sting as opposed to one for face Sting. Any of these kind of striking you as the direction to go overall for the company? Keep in mind, Sting's the champion, so whatever we do in the short term, it's probably going to have... Sting has to be a big part of it.
You're looking, again, if we're working under the premise that Revolution is still together, Filthy Animals are still together, I know they're not quite on the same stratosphere, so to speak, but it's getting very faction heavy, and it's that NWO theme keep coming back to it. I feel there just needs to be a break from that.
Interesting point, not to cut you off there, Carl, because I was going to go straight back to you, but this is actually an interesting point we're talking about off air, Kieran, about how that element of a stable heavy company, like you said, we've got the West Texas Rednecks, the Filthy Animals, we've got the Revolution, a lot of these alliances. Kieran, you're not as negative on this stable focus as some might be.
No, I'm not. I think it's an identity that we as WCW would have, that the previous sentence I said was not to compare ourselves to the competition. It is different, and I think is born out of a natural evolution of the company almost. This is the premise that you'd sell it as, coming out of the NWO domination era. It's almost like a natural evolution of guys falling into their own pockets of cliques and stables to survive in this environment. I think it's just that it creates a different environment, and it's also true to the history of where we've been the last few years. So,
but to your point, Carl, just to go back to you, you're against this idea of a big heel stable. Rick and Paul both mentioned there in the feedback, a heel stable. This is something that I'm guessing you don't really want to get involved with, and personally I don't think I do either.
No, just because it's that sense of harking back to something. You know, it's... To use... I know it hasn't happened in the way that we're treating this, but to use the New Blood as an example, it was just, you know... That faction heavy. They even busted out the spray paint and all that sort of thing. And I just... I'd be loath to get back to a sort of a faction heavy company.
The idea of all the guys got kicked out of the Horsemen reunite to fuck up Flair, that's quite a funny idea.
It'd be an interesting one, but the connection with Sting and Luger just doesn't wash for me.
What, those two together, or just those two?
Those two with Benoit and Malenko, I should say.
Yeah, fair enough. Moving along here now to kind of ideas, kicking it around the table here amongst ourselves. Kieran, you mentioned one there where you're talking about Scott Steiner. And just to kind of get on this kick, I'm a huge fan of Scott Steiner, and Scott Steiner returned from an injury around this time, the start of October. I'm a huge fan. I think that the way to go is Scott Steiner as the new hot heel in town. To me, a logical way to get rid of some of the guys we don't necessarily want to use, such as Roddy Piper, even Randy Savage if he doesn't have that much left in the tank, Hulk Hogan too if we want to fob him off. Because to me, I think, and you know, again, consensus around the table, Hogan and Flair need to be special attractions or used far less than they were being at this point in time. I think the perfect way to do it is to have Steiner fuck a bunch of these guys up.
My original theory for Hogan was still going with this theory of the Sting-Hogan match, but rather than do the sort of the bait and switch on the night of the show, because Hogan needs surgery, I'd take Hogan out of the equation weeks beforehand, and Steiner would be the perfect foil for that.
Yeah, Steiner's the guy. If we're putting Sting as a babyface, I'm not keen to take the belt off Sting until Starrcade, and I don't mind building up Scott Steiner for 3 months here and getting the belt at Starrcade.
Yeah, definitely. I actually had, like, along the same lines. I mean, like, in 2000, when he eventually did become, like, the lead heel, obviously he was in a pretty piss-poor company by then, he was one of the few highlights. So I think, like, he's one of the three names that I immediately think of that we got us pretty much almost skyrocket.
Just, here's a blueprint for a few months here in terms of what to do with Steiner and build him up. He came back, the thing is, again, him, there's certain guys on the roster around this period of time, it's kind of what makes it so sad, is because I have a horrible stigma about WCW from this period of time, that September 99 period, because that was the month, if I'm not mistaken, it might have been a month earlier, where Channel 5... got WCW worldwide.
Yeah.
And it was just so fucking horrible that all the people that I've been talking about wrestling to at school watched that show and thought, that sucks. Like, yo, Sid, Rick Steiner, Hulk Hogan, all these guys throwing terrible punches. Lex Luger, you know, not exactly in his prime years here either. So you got this whole horrible stigma. But Steiner, there are certain guys, Steiner's one of them, Benoit's another, who the audience is ready to accept in a higher role. And I think Steiner could have come in, I would have had him eviscerate Hogan, I would have had him eviscerate Piper. I'd probably have him eviscerate Savage as well. Flair, to me, general opinion around the table, should probably be the president of the company.
Yep.
Babyface president?
Yeah.
Definitely in the non-wrestling capacity.
Gives him a chance to do promos.
Yeah, absolutely. Does he want to be a heel, though?
There's an audience that likes and worships Ric Flair and doesn't want to boo him.
I think the problem you've got there is that, again, it's something that had already been done earlier in the year.
True.
And Flair... whilst we can sit here and insist you are going to be the babyface figurehead, you know what those performances are going to be like, because his heart's not going to be... it's going to come across as fairly wooden. He's going to be withdrawn, and I don't think in that sense he's going to add an awful lot of value.
When Steiner's doing all this, and because Steiner, I think, needs a big win to establish him as a big threat, so once he takes out Hogan, takes out Piper, takes out Savage, and Flair's, you know, threatening to fine him or threatening action against him this entire time, threatening to suspend him maybe, and Steiner just ignores it and does whatever the fuck he wants, very much in the role of, yeah, that fucking monster push they gave to Sid as the Millennium Man, where he's just coming in and interrupting matches, which just fucking stunk. If you do that with Steiner beating up these legit top guys, he's ignoring orders, and he eventually does it to David Flair as a way to write David Flair out. You got a natural tie in there for Flair to get pissed and have a blood feud, and Flair can do the great Ric Flair angry promos. God damn it, the suit's coming off. I've got to deal with this. This is one of the matches. I'll cash in a match here. Whatever the fuck you want to do. Have Flair and Steiner at the Mayhem show in November. Steiner gets a big win, bloodies, batters, and beats Ric Flair. Sets him on the path for Starrcade against Sting.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to go back to the original point of using these guys who are going to shit can or tone down to put over the new guys, it's absolutely the way to go. So, yep, full thumbs up from me.
Steiner can sweep a fair bit of this deadwood out the door.
There's a couple of different philosophies around this table that I'm getting a sense, and I don't know if there's how many angles you guys across the table have in mind, but I know for me, Kieran, we talked about this off air. You're not so much a big fan of the company-wide angle. Am I right in saying that? You're more along the lines of me, I would assume, in terms of I'm more hoping to kind of gradually just change things into a different WCW.
You mean in rather than doing like a restart angle?
Yeah, something. Those restarts are horrible, but again, like an angle like the NWO where you have, where everybody's involved, kind of thing. Or the New Blood Millionaires Club, that all-encompassing company-wide thing. That's something that I personally don't think that's the way to go.
I think to do an angle like that, I think it's space storage. I think you need to set the real world, and I think the first 6-12 months of our company should be setting the scene of what it is to be in WCW. And I think, yeah, jumping into such a big, heavy, company-wide angle straight away like that, a bit of Joseph Campbell, you need to set the real world before you can take us off on into the story kind of thing. So yeah, absolutely.
Here have a thousand faces.
Here have a thousand faces. Because I said that just screams of short-term panic changes, which is what the company's been doing and obviously will go on to do, but not now that we've got the job instead of Russo. They need stability and calmness at this point, I think, so I'm happy to go with the slow evolution.
United States champion Sid Vicious, we've agreed to fire this guy. Who's getting the belt?
Generally, we think Benoit is a good guy for the position, but I'm not really sure if little Benoit and big Sid is a good visual to put over.
He went for it, it sold out, I suppose. Benoit did beat Sid for the title on his way out the door.
He likes my idea then. He thinks Benoit's small.
To tie Steiner into this, you can
come off the second rope early.
Well, you could do that. I think what I would probably do is, again, Sid would be on the hit list for Steiner. I know it's a heel attacking another heel, but if you can have Steiner as the war man, it makes perfect sense with his get up and his promos of the time. So that takes Sid out of the equation. You can have the US belt vacant, do a tournament, not a very long tournament. We're a US company, we don't do tournaments well by and large. You know, but that could be something you could do over a period of a couple of weeks to lead to the final at Halloween Havoc. Have Benoit win the tournament. He can vacate the TV title. We can throw it in the garbage like they did originally, only this time Duggan's fired so there's no one around to find it and we never speak of it again.
Okay, well, this leads to a very interesting point, because before you got to this humble abode of ours, Kieran, you were talking about the situation with the belts. Yeah. It seems like a very natural segue, so we'll talk about it now.
I say, well, I'm all for slowing stories in the company down in general, and there's just one too many titles for me. So then you got TV title and you got cruiserweight title, and for me, I just think the cruiserweight title is, which is 3, 4, 5 years, however old it is now, it's a bit passe, really. Who's the champion? Is it
Lenny Lane?
Yeah. But no, I'm in favour of, if we're culling this roster, getting a lot of the deadwood out of the mid card, I would maybe unify or quietly unify the TV title with the cruiserweight title and scrap the cruiserweight title, and those guys who are working underneath on the cruiser level, I think, move up to the TV title, which becomes the weekly belt, which is defended every week, hence the name, which shockingly TNA never grasped that.
No.
And as G said to this, the positive is it's a kind of a softer step for them. The cruiserweight guys don't get labelled with a cruiserweight tag. They've got their position on the card and they may be around the TV title, and the TV title might get the prestige of, you know, like a work rate belt, but maybe without the restrictions of the weight division, and just the cruiserweight title is a bit stale, I think. It's a bit passe.
I think the problem at this point is everybody knows the best years of the cruiserweight belt are behind it, and you're constantly trying to recapture something, and it's hard to recreate a dynamic.
Yeah, but there's still an element that it's associated with better matches, and I understand the notion of wrestlers being typecast, if you like, But I think it speaks to that sense of legitimate sport to have a belt that's fought over by wrestlers of a lower weight. And like boxing, wrestlers can always move up a weight. I'm all for keeping the cruiserweight title. Get it off Lenny Lane. Let's make that abundantly clear.
Who gets it for you?
Can we come back to that? Because I don't just want to blurt out a name.
Okay, fair enough.
I understand the idea of the TV title being defended weekly, but what has the TV championship ever meant in sort of the Nitro era, if you like? It's never meant anything outside of one series of matches between Booker and Benoit, and that was quickly pissed away within a matter of months and forgotten about. To me, that belt has by and large always been worthless, is worthless at this point, and I think that's the belt that has to go.
But I think, just as I think this company's salvageable, I certainly think certain title histories are salvageable as well. And I've always liked the idea, like that's Kieran's stated, where the TV title's defended every week, and just kind of confused that no one else has really kind of done that. The Cruiserweight was, funnily enough, was the actual division I had most difficulty in seeing the future in. I had like loads of names in it, but I was actually trying to figure out like who to book who, because there's a certain group of cruiserweights in my mind that I'm elevating as soon as I can in the right way up into the top end of the roster, which kind of leaves it doesn't leave the cruiserweight bare bones, but it leaves a lot of figureheads gone from that division. Get rid of that divide of they're the small guys, that's where they belong. The big guys, that's where they belong. It should be just on talent alone.
What are the smaller guys fighting each other over?
You know? TV title.
So it becomes the cruiserweight title by default, then.
Yeah. Because you got the TV title, you got the cruiserweight belt, so what's the point of having both of them? So get rid of one of them. What's the most restricting? Get rid of the cruisers.
There is absolutely no sort of grandeur or lustre in being a television champion.
You have to create it.
Well, get it over then, won't we?
Yeah, Lenny Lane's not exactly bringing sparkles, other than the bows that you put on the belt to that division anyway. What? Moving on to some more of your ideas now before we go back to our discussion. Murder from WrestlingForum.com says, make Nitro 2 hours and Thunder 1 hour. Have Goldberg win World War 3 and challenge Sting for the title at Starrcade. Build towards Hart versus Hogan at Starrcade and have Hart turn on Hogan and reform the NWO with Hall, Nash, Jarrett and Steiner, instead of phasing out Flair and Luger, using to get new guys over. I'm not a big fan of the NWO reunion idea. Nitro to 2 hours is interesting, because at this time, and the reason why the roster was so goddamn huge in the first place was because they had 3 hours of Nitro, 2 hours of Thunder, Saturday Night and Worldwide that they had to do. So I don't think we are in a position here necessarily to take away a show like Thunder, but they did take an hour away from Nitro, well, under Russo. So, could we do that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I must admit, it never occurred to me to mention it, because maybe out of arrogance, I just assumed we would reduce the number of hours on Nitro anyway.
Yeah, I thought you said the same to us.
Yeah. The Baddest from F4W message board says, do a brand split. Put Hogan, Goldberg, Nash, Hall, Sid, DDP, and some guys on one show, and Flair, Benoit, Brett, maybe Sting and Luger, and your best workers on the other. Let Arn and Finlay be the agents for that show. They still hadn't cut a ton of the guys yet, like they would in 2000, so you have more than enough bodies to do it. The reason is, the biggest internal obstacle right now stopping you from turning WCW around is the cliques backstage. This is divide and conquer. And again, the reason why Bischoff hired so many people originally was because he wanted an NWO show and a WCW show. So this was in Bischoff's mind, kind of, anyway.
The people that we think of as the negative locker room influences, regardless of whether or not they've got all their buddies there or not at a particular taping, they're still pricks. They've still got egos, they still want their spot, whether or not they're friends with them or not. If we were keeping the roster intact, I'd maybe entertain the idea of a brand split, but on the basis that we're looking to cut this roster and cut some of the payroll.
Yeah, that's a big thing.
I think we just hamstring ourselves by putting a brand split in.
Moving along now, Tiger Rick from the UK Fan Forum with a few ideas here. Says, no massive angle, just put the title on Goldberg and build up the next 6 to 8 challenges to the title by keeping them winning, giving people a reason to love or hate them, and keeping them away from each other. Goldberg never had the world title run he should have had. At that point, I'd have built Brett, Sting, Benoit, Booker, DDP, and Steiner as his next challengers, taking them all the way through to mid-2000. Point number two, make the appearance of really old people sporadic on TV. Number three, make the TV and Cruiserweight titles exclusive to Thunder, and make it a show where the up-and-comers battle. Lots of rotation in the roster. Get a lot of fresh talent from Japan, Mexico, and the Indies for short runs like they did in the old days. He also mentions to cut the talent and push La Parka. It's one of his big ones. So some funny ones there. I think building to Goldberg, getting the belt back, is far more useful than just giving the belt straight to Goldberg. My preference would be to have Steiner win it, like you said, at Starrcade, and Goldberg, It is, here you go, this is something I've been thinking about for a while. Shit on this, if you will, if you think it's a terrible idea. How about something where when Flair comes in, because the thing is, I don't know, I like the idea of the tournament, don't get me wrong, the tournament to crown number one contender, something along those lines, but a tournament's very, like you said, not usually well done, they're kind of a little bit staggered. What about, would something work where maybe if Flair's the president and he's given the blank slate by the company, yes, we know you went fucking crazy before, you're on, we're watching you closely, Flair, but you've got a blank slate for now. Flair says the same thing. Everyone's got a blank slate in this company. In terms of determining the most valuable guy to take on the world champion, some kind of thing where everybody in the roster is eligible, and as soon as you lose a match, you get your name crossed out. And the last guy who's left becomes the number one contender, gets a title match whenever he wants, blah, 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 blah. You can whittle it down week by week. Every match has implications. Everything has meaning. You can, if there's screw jobs that in a match, it's got relevance because you've just cost somebody a potential world title match in the future. You get some kind of scenario where, again, you've got 3 months here. You can do this slowly to where the final's at Starrcade. Steiner wins the world title from Sting at Starrcade. Goldberg wins this whole thing, becomes the last guy to lose a match, gets a title match whenever he wants. So we know he's the number one contender, but then yeah, you can always have some kind of angle happen on Nitro to pull him away. Some kind of situation, to me, where you know the match with Goldberg and Steiner is coming in the future, but we don't know when it's going to happen. We know it's happening, Goldberg versus Steiner, and the whole idea being you build Goldberg up as a monster by never losing and establishing that he's the only guy to do such a thing. Steiner goes on a rampage, ending careers, maybe a stare down the Nitro after Starrcade, but then an angle happens with Goldberg later to put him away momentarily, so he has to deal with these obstacles before getting back to Steiner. Months of build, the Sabu-Taz principle of building a match over a long period of time where you've got two guys who everyone knows, and because they're both, to me, they're the most marketable guys in the company anyway at the top level. You could do it with a tournament, but I was just trying to make something different.
Yeah, it is. It's an interesting one, actually. But obviously, I'm all for Goldberg, Scott Steiner kind of showdown down the line. You'd certainly have to build to it. Take your time with it, because when you get there, it should be pretty glorious. But it's actually an interesting way of putting Goldberg over. I mean, we had a conversation last night, a pretty long one, about Goldberg and certain issues I have with him. Okay, one of my kind of issues was always the kind of like always winning, I guess, and just like, oh, do we just put him back on a streak again or whatever, or how do you actually progress?
Try and recapture the magic.
Yeah, and so it's interesting because with what your idea is there, it's not essentially the fact. It's really kind of splitting hairs here. It's not necessarily he's always winning, it's just he's never losing. Which is actually like,
it's kind of, what you did.
You know what it is? It's like technically, it's the same thing, but also kind of like different, if you know what I mean. Yeah.
Call it a flair for the gold. There you go. Across the table, what do you think about something like this? But mine, across the table, do you think Goldberg's the face to build around for WCW?
Yeah, absolutely. Very difficult to keep him away without forcing it and wasting his time, which is what they did for so much anyway with Goldberg. Just treading water. Goldberg shouldn't tread water. Goldberg.
I agree completely. But to me, this is a good way to make him not tread water, because he does have, there's a narrative here with Goldberg where he's on the road to doing it, but again, if something pulls him away, he always has to have a reason to not do the Steiner match. He'll never float around once he's a normal contender in this scenario. He would always have to be pulled away by some angle, something that happens to him where he has to deal with this first. Yeah, I just like the idea of Steiner and Goldberg crossing paths now and again, and there being massive tension every time they do, but they never actually collide until the match actually happens. They never touch.
I'm all in favour of the sort of the crisscrossing of Steiner and Goldberg, and sort of the slow build and the tease of it. The concern I would have with your suggestion there is, if Goldberg's on this path as a byproduct of what Flair's stated, and everyone's got a clean slate, and you win matches to stay relevant, what's the point in someone going through that if other guys are getting title shots in the intervening period? You see what I mean?
I'm all
in favour of the general premise, but it's sort of the journey that I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, I see what you mean. It's one of those, 'cause I was thinking about this too, and I was trying to compare it to World War III, where they say the winner gets guaranteed a title shot any time he wants, but when it isn't exactly set in stone. When I originally thought of this idea, my idea was, this is the match that dictates the number one contender for Starrcade.
In which case, are we, just so I'm right in thinking this, we're sticking with the notion that World War III happens in 1999, which obviously
didn't. I'm not a big fan of that. I would rather get rid of that fucking match.
I would argue for keeping it on this last occasion as the start of the first tease. There could be you still got your third ring. You can have them clearing out the other rings, though.
Yeah.
Goldberg doesn't necessarily get to Steiner and vice versa. You could have your first tease there. You know, have them come in from their respective rings, stand off. then you have Nash coming in from another ring, or insert name, you know, in,
it would be Nash.
No, yeah. it would be Nash, knowing how history's gone, but you know, insert name here that prevents it happening for whatever reason.
Yeah. Loss from Pro Wrestling Gaming has a good few suggestions here. He says, get the belt on Goldberg immediately and put him at the centre of everything, building to two key matches later in the year, Bret and Flair. Bret seeking full redemption after the Owen tragedy, and Rick making one last run at the top and putting everything he has out there. He says, make Benoit and Guerrero a main event level tag team with Arn there to run interference and act as their mouthpiece. They would still work most of the same guys they did as a team anyway, but the division would be more spotlighted. Kieran, I know you were kind of thinking the idea of Benoit as a heel as well.
So Benoit we're looking at, I'd like him in that upper echelon because for work rate and intensity, and he's fresh and
crowd was going to buy it too.
Yeah, exactly, that, especially with that crowd. So to get there though, I think the question is, do we want to go straight position him as a face, or I don't know, my inclination is to maybe have him as a heel with a nice long run with the US title.
Here's a question. The Revolution is together at this time. Benoit, Malenko, Saturn, Douglas. They'd just been eviscerated at Four Brawl, losing matches to, respectively, I believe it was Sid Vicious, Rick Steiner, Brian Knobbs, and Hugh Morris. Clean in every case, by the way. Do you keep the Revolution together with Benoit as a heel?
I would be, although saying I'm not against them in some respects, in favour of the gang mentality, my top guys probably wouldn't be. To get Benoit from that US title level up to the world title level, I like to have him make him as a killer heel. The natural thing for him to turn, again, if Scotty was the champion, that'd be a fantastic opponent for him.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
Or even if you do a thing with Goldberg, that'd be also great as well. So the journey to main event, I think, probably as a heel, and then maybe to take him over to the next level, flip him, and he'd be hot, I think. So
okay, pretty interesting. Because to me, I think Benoit had a lot of goodwill with the fans at the time. I probably would have tried to keep
him
along
did.
Those lines.
That's, yeah, I totally agree with that. I just
you just think it's a mechanism to move
and
him up.
The thing is that this, I think, in terms of work rate heels, there aren't on. So I probably
DDP's about it,
and I'd also probably in favour of flipping Booker.
Yeah, I was thinking, yeah,
and pushing him as a heel as well. So
I'm not really sure on the disposition of Benoit. I was automatically going with a face, but I very much like the argument you've made there. I would certainly do what WCW did at the time, in the sense of I'd get him away from the Revolution. I don't want him in a group.
Yeah,
I
get him away too.
But whether or not you settle on babyface or heel, I want him away from the group because I think he can stand on his own. I would actually put Malenko and Saturn together as a tag team.
Yeah, I'd do the same.
And I'd put the tag belts on them.
Yeah, me too. Absolutely. the only other team I was thinking of kicking around my own head would be Bret and Benoit to try and raise the belts, but if Benoit's going to be US, then I've got no problem with Saturn as tag champs. As heels or faces?
As heels.
Yeah, I think Douglas is suited better as a heel anyway.
Bearing in mind at the time that Harlem Heat are babyface tag champs, and I'll be honest, Harlem Heat as a tag team aren't long for my world.
Well, Stevie Ray's getting fired in our world, so he's dropping the belts, and then if he's not gone, sucker's got to go.
If he's not gone tomorrow, he's gone the next week. I would disagree on Booker, though.
Okay.
I keep Booker as a babyface.
Going back to Loss and Pro Wrestling Only, he says, speaking of tag teams, a heavier focus on tag teams all around would have been a way to revitalize the division. Tag wrestling started making a comeback in the WWF later in the year when the Hardys and Edge and Christian had their ladder match, but before that had been dead for years. Tags could have been WCW's calling card. Even the top singles wrestlers should have been interested in the tag titles and had a regular partner when the situation called for it. For Goldberg, I would have made that person Booker T. Rebuild the relationship with New Japan and maybe get some shooter types to come in and take dives for Goldberg, building them up is the real deal who can beat the best fighters in the world. Find a way to sign Ken Shamrock at all costs for this. Speaking of Japan, revitalize the cruiserweight division by bringing in the stars from Michinoku Pro that were starting to get stale there, but would be in a fresh environment now. While there were so many talented wrestlers in the division already, so many of them were wasted and seen as jokes, so I would have cleaned them out. Ray would be the focal point of the division. I realise he had already been unmasked at this point and he can't just put the mask back on, but I do think a Muta Muto style alter ego thing could have worked well with Mysterio in a role like this. I want to get the mask on Mysterio yesterday in my world.
Yeah, my angle for this is, hey Ray, here's a mask.
That's all it takes.
Mine's like to put the mask on him, but the mask inside is coated with glue, so he can't ever take it off. He sleeps in it.
Far more marketable. Going back to Loss again, more annual traditions that link to yesteryear. Starcade wasn't really presented as their WrestleMania and hadn't in some time. A few history packages and that would be an easy change. Bring back the Bash tour by doing a series of more special than usual shows, with the series ending at the Great American Bash pay-per-view.
Your apathy towards the Master Ray, is that because it's shitting on the storyline to take it off him in the first place?
I've always just found it incredibly insulting that Ray decided to rock up in WWF with the mask on. And I dare say it was obviously a company decision as well. I've just never been able to get away from the fact of this whole the Mexican legacy thing, which I totally understand, and the old, well, we'll give you a push. It's gone. Okay, let's go. He looks like a 12-year-old choir boy, for fuck's sake. Once, to me, once the mask's off, it's like the old, you know, the toothpaste out the tube sort of thing. It's,
you can't go back.
The luster's gone, and I'm not... Put the mask back on him by all means. You'll get some merchandise sales.
He also says Ric Flair needed to be presented as an almost untouchable icon who only wrestled 3 to 4 times a year and usually won when he did. He could have had all the interview time they wanted to give him, as those segments are usually a good bet to pop a rating, but there was no reason for him to be out wrestling on TV all the time, which we agree with. New announcers. I don't know where they would get them from or who they would be, but Bobby Heenan needed to go. Tony, I don't think, was bad, but he was burned out, and the Foley thing really hurt his credibility. Zbyszko didn't add much, and Tanay was good for providing background on the Japanese and Mexican guys, but I'd use him more as an assistant to help prep the lead announcers than to actually bring him to the booth. And the final thing he says is, I think they should have found a way to leverage whatever music was part of the Time Warner library. I mention the music because they needed an aesthetic overhaul that made them feel more contemporary, and that might have helped. The music I'll go with, because like the fucking crappy themes that some of the guys, like Bret Hart for Christ's sake, had like the worst theme song in the world that no one can even remember because it sucked. A lot of interesting things
I've
there.
I've actually got it on MP3. But,
but I just thought it was interesting about the announcers, actually, because of all the people and the names you sent me, at least as far as I'm aware, he didn't send me anything to do with the announcers.
No.
However, they were up, and I was kind of looking at that, thinking, well, yeah, because when I was watching 4 Brawl, and look, you know, I like Heenan as much as the next person, but he's lost a lot of luster by this point. You know, this isn't Heenan from, you know, 91, 92, whatever. It's just paint by numbers for him, so...
I would slowly start to phase him out, I think. Make sure he has, you know, perfect, nice severance pay, office job, whatever he wants. I'm taking care of the brain one way or another. Shivani, I don't really care about.
Does he not get a severance package?
He'll get whatever's left on his contract. In terms of going forward, though, with the commentary team... I make Hudson.
I like
my
Hudson.
My play-by-play guy. I like Hudson.
I keep Mark Madden away.
Mark Madden never sees the light of day. But in terms of the guy that goes with him, I'm almost inclined to say, and this will probably get laughs around the table, but I'm almost inclined to go with Arn. At least on it, because there's no other names jumping out at me at the moment. Oh. Even if it was just...
Kieran's got one.
Go on.
Don West hasn't been discovered yet.
For God's sake, don't tell me there's more.
So before we get to any other further ideas from the listeners, G, I know you have an angle you want to pitch, so this seems like the appropriate time to do so.
Yeah, my general idea is I would do what, like you actually said already, is I'd have Ric Flair kind of semi-retire and become president of WCW and become the guy who's running the actual company itself. In the meantime, on my counterpoint on that, I would actually bring back Eric Bischoff as a TV character and do something where basically it's kind of stated that this guy is being basically brought in this time by the what's the term, the studio, the studio, and so he's the showrunner, and I would create and try desperately to have this not like the NWO WCW thing, but have like this internal kind of conflict between Rick, who's running the company, and Eric Bischoff, who's running the TV shows. Eric Bischoff is, because he's an asshole, is trying to put over the people who he likes. In my head, I got who those guys would be. You know, you could swap them around. Personally, I would personally have DDP and the Jersey Triad, because I like the Jersey Triad, and also DDP is a connection there. You know, they live down the road, and oh, here's that cup of sugar I borrowed off you, whatsoever. And the other one would be Scott Steiner, who's just there'll be a different dynamic with Bischoff and Scott to Bischoff and DDP. DDP and Bischoff would be best friends. Bischoff and Scott, it's just he's fucking scared of him, so he's just like, yeah, Scott, do whatever you want, which can cross over the whole him injuring at people. So he's like, I'm going to go and fuck this guy up, and he's like, go do it, Scott. I go, fucking hell, just get him out of my office, really. He's just scared of the guy, so he just allows him to do whatever he wants. You let Eric be Eric and just have the big ego. You can even have him on commentary if you want, putting over how great his little buddies are in here and stuff like that. And, you know, he runs, like, cheesy commercials or something, so hawking their merchandise or something. He basically, like, putting these guys over more so than actual genuine talent, like, which gets on the nerves of Ric Flair. The talent in particular I'm thinking of is Chris Benoit, Di Malenko and Perry Saturn. Carl already addressed the issues with Revolution and so on. I don't necessarily have anything against the Revolution. I liked them at the time, though that something would have to happen to Shane, where Shane gets taken out in this, because I have no need for him in this. So he can get
you
killed.
You mean out back?
Yeah, out back, yeah. He can get killed by Scott if you want. So basically it leaves like the Revolution like rudderless at the moment. There's no kind of direction. There's kind of like...
And after the four brawl beatings, that's not too much of a stretch.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah. They're just kind of like, whoa, what's going on? So on the kind of sub note, Bischoff is just like just gunning for Rick and he's just trying to make his life miserable as much as possible. The key figure in this, from a character standpoint, is Arn. I'd bring Arn in on this, where like Rick's placed Arn to keep an eye on Bischoff, and Bischoff's just like Rick, because he's trying to be Slick Rick and he's trying to be the clever businessman. He's just trying to do things the right way. Every time Bischoff's goading him, he's just, I'm actually going to restrain Rick. Rick's just restrained himself. Rick, I wish you just told me this during the meetings that we had and so on, and we could have talked about this instead of having to do this on air in front of everybody and so on and so forth. And he's trying to be the businessman, but Eric is just goading him. And the whole time, Arn is just looking at Rick. This isn't what Rick's like. Rick usually explodes, but Rick's trying to do the right thing. So in the end, it's Arn who actually explodes for Rick and has a go at Eric Bischoff. And so Arn starts to become kind of like the voice of reason, I guess, on the show. And so he sides with Chris Benoit, because obviously they've got the background of the Four Horsemen. He becomes the voice piece of Chris Benoit. If you want to keep the name Revolution or you want to get rid of it, that's fine, but it's just this temporary group together that are standing with Arn Anderson in favour of what Rick's trying to do with the company. They become synonymous with WCW. It's like you go back and forth with this up until, I'd probably say if you can, over the slow period till about Fall Brawl, where you're going to lead to like a War Games, right, as the blow off. The big moment on the lead up to the Fall Brawl is, don't know what the catalyst will be. I don't know whether it's some like sneak attack that they do on Arn, something malicious that they do just again irritate Rick. Rick just fucking explodes. If you can do this in Charlotte as well, if it coincides with like dates or whatever, it'll be even better because of the reaction. But you can imagine Rick as Rick's just kind of going like, I tried playing nice, I tried doing this the business way, I tried to work alongside you, and you can imagine like pulling the tie off, but I just gotta say, you're no good, and you just explodes, you're no good, son of a bitch, and you can take the freaking jacket off, and you can go mad, you can go into classic, insane, mad old man Rick, and he's just like, I'm gonna kick your ass, like much to like, Bischoff's just kind of like stunned, because he's surprised he's actually finally broken him, and Arn's like smiling in the background, because he's like, yes, he's fucking back, you know, he's not gonna take the shit anymore, and it leads to War Games, Ric Flair, Chris Benoit, Perry Saturn and Dean Malenko versus Bischoff's boys, which I assume would be Scott Steiner and the Jersey Triad. And you could do the whole thing with the stipulation of, if Ric Flair and his guys win, Ric Flair gets 5 minutes with Eric Bischoff. And so you'd have someone like, in my key position, Benoit. Benoit gets the win for his team. Ric Flair, all right, Eric, get your ass in here. Eric tries to flee. Arn comes out, grabs him, throws him in the cage, get your fucking ass in there. Flair beats the shit out of him for 5 minutes, puts on the figure four. Bischoff taps like a bitch. Yay. Anyone can do it, but Benoit, for me, would get like the big win. And he's the guy that's kind of like did this. You know, he's the guy that made it all happen within that match. And it's like, these are the three guys that stood up to Bischoff's bullshit.
Doing the match of Starrcade and the battle over the presidency earlier in the year, which I guess is one of the main arguments against doing something like this.
In principle... if we get Bischoff as a character, absolutely. But there's an ambiguity over company control, which has been one of the worst storylines and the big snails in this company so far. So for me, if you bring Bischoff in, he should not be in the company. Because what we've done is we need to set our foundation on what the company is now, a clear, solid direction, which is if he's going to be Flair as president, fine. Mm. But within that context, I think Bischoff would be perfect as the outside agent, like the Heyman or whatever. But it's the guys who... He's not even employed by the company. He's working for his guys.
Okay.
So he can't have any control.
Employed personally by Diamond Dallas Page.
It's the guys, whoever guys he's with. It's like that personal interaction. So that's okay. Just to clarify that. In terms of building the Flair, I mean, obviously I think we all agree he can only wrestle a few times. So whatever way you get to that is cool. But for me the big thing is that ambiguity over control. And also, I'd want Benoit away from the other vanilla midgets at this point.
Oh, big Kev.
Bischoff as a character. I still like him as a character, absolutely.
Yeah. That was just my idea of trying to figure out how to get the dynamics together of, like, how do you bring Bischoff back? And I just thought, seeing he had that TV executive kind of feel about him. We'll have him as a TV executive, though. But yeah, the kind of
Cyrus.
But yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was the ECW versus the network kind of thing, basically.
If he's an agent, that's why Bischoff can't have a fight, because he's not even employed by the company. That's a great tease.
You can't book him in a match.
Yeah, you can't book him in a match. Yeah. Fuck you, I'm going to fight
you. It's awesome. I'm all for Bischoff, the TV character, being involved at some point. He's only just gone away. I don't want to see him again before the turn of the year.
I'm agreeing with that.
I want Bischoff kept off TV for some time. I like the theory of building Flair up to something that, even the notion of Bischoff, even if it's TV executive, why would the company put him in that position, knowing his history with Flair? I know it wasn't resolved very well earlier in the year the way they did it, but they still did it. It's still fresh in everyone's mind. I wouldn't want to go back to it. It's the power struggle. It's almost the warring GMs. And the faction split off of we're WCW, we're Bischoff's boys. It screams. People are instantly going to think NWO again. They're going to, we don't have to be explicit and say it's an NWO group, but people are going to hark back to that, and they're going to think, well, what's really changing here? It's still the same formula. It's still the same. And it seems daft for me to say, considering the way I talked about the notion of resets earlier, but I think we need a more natural break away from that and to more focus on individuals.
Problem with that is the stars of the entire thing are still Flair on and Bischoff. It's not Benoit, it's not DDP, it's not Scott Steiner. They're bit players to a bigger thing. And the big issue that you're paying for is Flair getting his hands on Bischoff. Move on to some further ideas here. Nikki Fives from TPWW says, never hire Vince Russo. Use big money workers who can still work to job to young stars. Push guys like Benoit, Satin, Grow, Booker, Mysterio, Canyon, Kidman, Jindrak, O'Hare, Sanders, Awesome Storm when they get them, among others. Scrap Thunder and concentrate on a 2-hour Nitro, which is pretty much a consensus opinion. Bring in the castaways from ECW and the WWF that are under the age of 30 and can put together a good match. Wait 5 years and reap the benefits if there are any. Chaka Smacker from Wrestling Forum says, firstly, pull the primetime show from Monday, for Christ's sake. Would you move Nitro?
It's a tough one. It's...
it does give the look of failure to a failing company, which is an issue.
It does, but you know what? I think one of the biggest problems is going head-to-head is one of the biggest problems psychologically. I think that's why a lot of the snap decisions are getting made. So moving certainly gets away from that. Is it a carrying away of your tail between your legs? Maybe. What if you switch Nitro to Thursday, Scrap Thunder? It is a kick in the balls, and it's bad for your prestige, but maybe in the long term it might actually be more beneficial.
Yeah, Big Vic from TPWW Forums also says moving Nitro to Tuesday nights would be a huge help.
On the subject of Thunder, just briefly, had it already been moved to Wednesday at this
point?
Not
yet.
No, right, so you've still got that on a Thursday.
Yeah.
You've still got SmackDown on the Thursday.
Yeah.
I can't get past the stigma of it personally. I agree with your point there, Kieran. It's become a psychological thing for the company. But we're in charge now. It doesn't have to be. We're much more balanced, well-rounded individuals. We can look past that.
Holding a Carlsberg in his hand.
It's a podcast. They can't see that, Liam. My point is, so long as we are doing solid ratings, the company as a whole are happy with, and I'm talking about the wider Turner Broadcasting are happy with those numbers, I think we're perfectly capable of keeping it on Mondays. It's not a war at the moment. We've got to rebuild. But so long as our house is in order, as you said earlier, we can keep this going on a Monday. I don't see any need to move it. It's just, I can't get past that stigma of, it's another black...
It's a public black, blow.
It's a public blow to a company that's taken a few blows recently.
Max Moon from WrestlingForum.com says, I would do the same thing they did and hope for a better result this time. Maxman was not happy, by the way, that we excluded the Outsiders from our all-time favourite / best tag teams podcast a couple of weeks ago. So it seems like a natural segue to move to Hall and Nash, because Hall and Nash are under contract. They didn't get fired in our round of cuts. Nash is retired by Hulk Hogan at this point, although in reality they did bring them back in the crowd. Thoughts on Hall and Nash around the table and their use in the company at this point?
It's a tough one, because I think, in all honesty, for the health of the company, I think they need to go. And we just hope they go to WWF and fuck up that company. They're not here for the long term. It's just, for me, it's a question of what jobs can we get out of them? Can you work in the tags? As Carl says, it's a tough one. I think it might be borrowed time for both of them, to be perfectly honest. Because when it comes to reality, if they're not going to play ball, then what can you do with them?
Quick question here: do you have them as heels or faces? So I'd turn him babyface.
I think you almost have to have them babyface, because the way in which the crowd react to them, they react to them as babyfaces anyway.
Well, that's the point.
They don't treat them as heels. They treat them as their own sort of entities, if you like, and we're going to cheer these guys no matter what. And it is a real difficult one. I'm really stumped by it, because you know Nash isn't going to do... He's not a workhorse, shock horror. You couldn't put him on commentary, because he would certainly go into business for himself, as the company would find out a few weeks later. And he's not going to do the jobs that you would... And I'm not saying you wouldn't want to just job him out and make him irrelevant, but where you'd have those sort of strategically placed jobs, if you like.
Fancy booking, Cap is coming back on here. What do you think about an outsider's triad deal? Because to me, a guy they would put over is Diamond Dallas Page, because they've got the history with him, they've put him over in the past. Kevin Nash needs to be brought back in the mix somehow if you're going to have him there. Do the thing they did anyway, where they're sitting in the crowd, you know, Nash isn't affiliated with the company anymore, he's retired. Scott Hall's just being Scott Hall and he's just hanging out in the crowd like a bum.
Drunk.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, have them just do some, you know, hey, it's the outsiders here. Mike Tenay goes up and interviews and they make a bunch of ancillary comments about a bunch of guys, Lex Luger, Sting, Hogan, DDP. And DDP actually bites on it and throws a bar back in his interview later on. This can go back and forth a little bit. They're kind of having a little bit of some jibes at each other. And you can build to a confrontation at ringside where you've got DDP with the triad by him, looking at the outsiders. And he can just get on the mic and just rip them both to shreds as being, you know, Kevin Nash, you're useless, you're out of the company, you're retired, you've got no reason to be here anymore. Scott Holmes surprised you even know what time of day it is. Even make reference to the fact that, hey, I don't know, bringing the rehab.
This company's had no issue doing that before in the Nash and Hall singles.
Yeah, they had Scott Hall drinking beers while he held people in an abdominal stretch before. So I would reference that. I'd have DDP throw a beer in his face. I'd try and draw up a little personal thing there to get Scott anxious. Nothing really happens. Security intervenes. Next week, the outsiders come back down. Again, they're not affiliated with the company. Flair's trying to hold them back. Security, blah, 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 blah. And, because I like tying up loose threads, you have Diamond Dallas Page say to Nash, I'm just sad that it was the boot and the leg that retired you and not when I drove the Hummer into you. Wrap up that storyline they've been teasing for about 2 months and never fucking bothered paying off.
DDP can go on to explain about how his entire career, he was the guy that nobody thought was going to make it. He finally made it all the way to the top, to the WCW World Championship. And then, of course, 1 month later, Kevin Nash was the guy to beat him for it. So you got that built-in motive there anyway.
Because then you can create a situation where Hall and Nash, who are very funny guys naturally, and they're going to get over his baby faces whenever on the mic, gets them angry. And it gets them in a situation of actually looking for revenge. And if you can, you know, the big pull-apart brawl, security stopping them from jumping over the rail, you create an interesting dynamic where the outsiders are actually outsiders for a while, and you can create some interesting angles here. Eventually, Flair reinstates some time for Starrcade, and you do the big 2-on-3 match.
Yeah, it's got something to it.
And hopefully they put over DDP, since he's their friend.
The problem there is, that is, I think they probably would put over DDP as their friend. That is the only one they would put over.
Yep.
That is the only one that they would probably sell for as well. How much more steam has DDP got anyway? Whereas Canyon is someone I think who's got a few more years
left. I like Canyon a lot. I'm a big Canyon fan.
The problem is, and this is why I have such a difficulty, I really like the scenario, really do, and believe wholeheartedly they'd put DDP over. But by the same token, I think during the storyline run, if you like, obviously bury Bigelow because there's heat there going back a few years. I don't think they'd do anything for Canyon either because he's a small guy.
I don't think that's small, is he?
But in Nash's eyes, everyone's small.
Like, they seem like an anchor on the show in some way. But at the same, they've been such pushed stars for the last few years. You've got them there. It seems silly to not use them.
You know there's something to...
And there's something there, you know?
There is something there, and we know there's something there. It's going to be so hard to extract it.
I like the setup and the angle, but is there money in that angle?
I think there could be.
Yeah, significant from taking airtime from other people. You're talking the money they're on. You're talking there's no discipline in this company, and they're two of the biggest.
Well, this is our job to create some fucking discipline.
So I think
the days of these guys fucking doing promos where they say whatever they want, that needs to be over.
Yeah, I just think maybe, Nash can't go, and you can't put people over. Hall is an absolute liability at the best of times because you don't know from 1 month to the next where he's going to be. Maybe you come in and you make an example of him straight away. To be honest, in terms of turning around WCW, I think that's probably the most benefit you can get from him, use him to make an example of.
Really?
Yeah, I think as much as I would want to keep them involved, if they were willing participants, you could get a so much use out of them. I think the most logical, realistic, and ultimately best thing to do is probably just to send their asses home.
this point in 1999, I don't see any benefit of Scott Hall being in that company. He's just nothing but a bad influence, and I was kind of up in air as to exactly what to do with Nash and Hogan, how to deal with them. My only thought was just not to have them around. I mean, in terms of the actual dynamics of what you suggested, it all sounds very good if the two people that the triad were facing were reasonable men. But they're not. One of them is a renowned drunk, and the other one's got a history of heart attacks.
So, inconvenient times.
At inconvenient times. So, hot diggity dang, I don't think it'll work.
Moving on here to some more feedback before we get to some more ideas kicking around here. WWF Chili from the UK fan forum says, WCW really became unsalvageable when in 1999 you still had the same blokes in the main events. 98 was really the last year anyone accepted it, and even then people were losing interest. I would have still hired Russo, but I would have told him that before he signed he had to work on a committee. It wouldn't have been daft to hire Russo in 99. If he was available, and like everyone else who fell for his jabbering, he would be considered a steal. Eventually everyone would have figured out he was a dick anyway. Jesus, really, WCW was just fucked, wasn't it? I'm out of ideas. Goldberg. When in doubt, something something Goldberg. That works. Oh, and any angle is better than another NWO reboot. Fucking state of that. just to be a contrarian to that, Matt B425 from FWW says, I'd rejoin the original NWO and build to a big pay-per-view where if they lose, they disband forever. And Andrew PC...
sorry.
Bring them back. Disband them. Brilliant.
Andrew PCW says, and the NWO in a feud with the Horsemen. You built a 4-on-4 match, but conspicuously there are several guests at ringside. Luger, Ole, Sid, Wyndham, hell, even Paul Roma. And of course, when the NWO starts doing the multiple run-ins, all the guys hop the barricade, beat the shit out of the NWO, and the Horsemen win. Once a Horseman, always a Horseman.
Yeah, because those guys are really going to sell for gym rat Paul Roma.
KO Bossy from WrestlingForum.com says, the main event scene was stale and New Blood was needed immediately. I agree that Jarrett coming in was a chance to make a start and they made one in him. I think Jarrett gets a bum rap when it comes to his abilities. He's a great old school southern heel. Kieran, you mentioned before Jeff Jarrett in terms of putting him in with Kurt Hennig and the West Texas Rednecks. Is that where you'd slot him in that kind of mid-card heel kind of a role? Because I see him as a mid-card chicken shit heel.
He would be. He wouldn't be. I never bought him as the chosen one, blah, blah, blah.
No, when he started doing the tough guy stuff, yeah. That's I didn't like that.
But I mean, as that mid-card chicken shit touch of comedy in there, I think he's got a value to add. So yeah, that's his position for me. That
I'm guessing everybody's kind of in agreement there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would maybe have him a little bit higher than the mid-card, possibly just because you need, on the way that we're cutting the roster, and we talked earlier about sort of workhorse heels in more prominent roles. I would maybe push him slightly further up to fill that void.
Yeah, there is a bit of a void on the heel side.
But it wouldn't be long term, and much like everyone else around the table, I don't see him being a prominent player in any world title picture.
I see
in
a US
point.
Title.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the thing is, it's, you know, too much too soon as the killer, I think. I think it was killer for him. And someone like JBL, who's, I think, universally, you know, the guy's got talent, but you know, the push he got coming off the APA, blah, blah, blah. It just wasn't believable. It was too much too soon. So there's always room to grow for Jeff.
Yeah.
If
Jeff was over, just removed from putting over China famously on
absolutely,
pay-per-view.
Yes,
so.
I mean, yeah, there's always room to grow.
KO Bossy also says, the destruction of the cruiserweights needed to be remedied. Even at this point, they had guys like Disco Inferno getting title reigns. I think Lash LaRue had a lot of talent and they could have brought some new fighters to the division with him. Blitzkrieg was vastly underutilized. Kaz Hayashi is another guy who they never really did nothing with. They had tons of guys just sitting around doing nothing, and that's a real shame. He also says the celebrity involvement needs to get toned down drastically, which I completely agree with. The days of Master P and Kiss, and that, yeah, I'll tell you what, I want to know how much that $12 million they were on course for losing went to people like them.
Well, Master P made 7 figures, Rodman made 7 figures, you know, I'd be hard pressed to say that you could have put the company in a position where it was profitable by year's end, but you certainly could have maybe taken a good quarter off those losses just off the back of not having that celebrity involvement. But again, the celebrity involvement thing is something where, much like cutting Nitro down to 2 hours, I think it goes without saying that we wouldn't be doing that.
KO Bossy's final point here about something he would change. WCW's version of ECW. If you thought WWE's rendition of Hardcore was bad, you may have forgotten this. This is why so many people hated the Hardcore division. It was simply a blatant copy of other companies and made WCW feel so second rate. Every match was a meaningless plunder brawl with run-ins and the most ridiculous campy fighting. I remember Norman Smiley versus Brian Knobbs, where they were throwing hot dog buns at each other and selling them. If WCW really wanted to compete, they'd have presented themselves as an alternative and stayed away from this. By October 1999, they should have totally ditched it. I think we're in agreement here. No hardcore title, no hardcore matches.
I was going to say.
Russo brought one in at the start of, I think it was Mayhem they crowned the first one. It was.
They'd already at this point had the hideous, I want to say car wreck. It was a car wreck by the end of it, but they're all fighting.
Oh, the Junkyard Battle
Royale. The Junkyard Battle Royale they'd already have, which had injured several people. And
Gary Thompson says, simple, wrestling, easy as that. The ratings are in decline, they need to stop. The Monday Night War was essentially over at this point, let's be honest. The WWE fans loved the company because it was traditionally a wrestling company. That would have been enough to stop the rot. The guys who won't do jobs make them all sit at home until the contracts expire. Booker T and Scott Steiner came along at the right time. Push them, Malenko, Benoit and others, while the legends sit at home, and hopefully they say they want a piece of it and become compliant. Hogan's contract expires in 2000, so let him go. Hall and Nash the same. I would save money by doing a TNA arena type deal, only one place for TV, travelling as little as possible to cut costs. I'm not a fan of that one because I think that makes it feel minor league at a time it desperately needs to not feel minor league.
No, it that had served its purpose when Bischoff did it at the MGM studios. That the time and place for that had been and gone, I think. If, like you say, it's in much the same way of moving Nitro today to another day. You've got a company that's had a significant fall from grace. If you then decide that you're going to take that even further, it just screams that you're scaling things back and you don't necessarily have much faith in turning the company around.
Just to go around the table now, some general thoughts on placing. There's certain guys here, and obviously we mentioned we had Gary's comments there about, and obviously the most overwhelming, easy answer to this whole problem of what can you do to save it is push new people, because obviously there's plenty of new people to push. So in terms of getting to placements for certain people that are possibly underutilized, let's talk a little about Eddie Guerrero, because Eddie had come back in June of 1999 after being away half a year thanks to the car wreck. At this point he's a babyface in the Filthy Animals. This might be a good way to bring up the Filthy Animals overall, because I don't think I'm alone in thinking that this is one group that should disband.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everybody's diving from the mic at once.
Oh yeah, let's just drop him like a bad habit.
Yeah, split this team up. What do you do with Eddie? I want to see what everybody thinks about Eddie Guerrero at this period of time. But the crowd's with Eddie. What do you do with him? He's currently a babyface. What do you think?
I'm not talking about timings or anything, but he'd be my long term. If we were scrapping the cruiserweight title, which maybe Carl's put the kibosh on now, but
let's just clarify that. But before you, just so you know where you're going with this. In terms of the titles, I know where Kieran stands, I know where G stands. This is pretty much on you as to whether or not the Cruiserweight title stays or goes.
Oh man, this is a tough one because I see the case for... Oh fuck. I think I drop it.
Oh fuck you all.
I think that Kieran's case is good. When I think of the guys who are being underutilized currently in the case, like, because the thing is, Ray's not going to be near the Cruiserweight belt if I'm running things. Neither's Kidman. I think Kidman can do more and be putting their guys who are more marketable to oppose, which leaves you with guys like UV, Psychosis, a couple of other guys that obviously there's a lot of talent in there, but I think it's actually more effective to put these guys in around the TV title. Guys like guys who aren't on the roster yet but are signed with the company, Shannon Moore, Shane Helms, Jimmy Yang, you got Kaz Hayashi, you can put them in tag teams, they can have their own little tag team feud. I think there's a way to use all the guys you want to use and not need the Cruiserweight title.
I'd have probably Eddie as my staple TV champ long run.
Yeah, you can defend it every week.
Awesome matches week in, week out with all these great guys. Halfway through, if we bring in Ray into this, we turn Eddie heel. I think Eddie gets elevated as a heel, and then long term again he switches face for the money, you will.
The real money.
Yeah, the real money is a fact, but I think really elevates him up through the card as a heel.
Yeah, there are guys who I would want to be featured more prominently in a much shorter time span. We've mentioned Steiner. I think we're all in agreement on Benoit. I would rather see Booker featured more prominently before I get to Guerrero. Guerrero, much like Kieran, is someone I would go with long term. Maybe a couple of years down the line, he's more in the top echelon of the company, and I'd want to build him strongly over time. I'd also want to bear in mind the fact that he has had that car wreck. When he comes back, he's not quite the same. Now we know why that was in retrospect, given his demons, as they like to say. I would almost just want to check the lay of the land when it comes to Eddie and just give it some time and just be completely confident that I could trust him going forward.
I like the Filthy Animals. they need to be separated at different levels. I because I didn't think beforehand about what I was going to do with the Cruiserweight. I had Billy Kidman being the focal point of the Cruiserweight, but you know, now it's gone, like Kidman will be up in
hold on. You had an idea for what you were going to do with the Cruiserweight title, you decided to ditch it anyway.
Let me clarify, my idea for the Cruiserweight title is that Kidman's holding it. That was my idea, so it wasn't much of an idea. So Kim was easily able to convince me after that decision, you know. So don't worry, it's not like I had like a year's plan for Kidman. It was just like he's going to hold the belt whilst they figure out what the fuck I'm going to do with the division. In terms of Eddie, when we're watching these guys, I love all three of them. I think all three of them should be pushed
by all three. Not to interrupt you here, I'm assuming you mean Eddie, Kibben and Ray. You're leaving out Conan, the fourth member, so I'm guessing you don't see much in Conan.
Oh no, I absolutely see someone in Conan. I'm joking. No, it's obviously Ray Mysterio, Kidman and Eddie Guerrero. Actually, Kidman I'd have around TV title. Ray Mysterio I'd personally have more around the United States.
Your idea, if I'm not mistaken, not to put words in your mouth, your idea was for Ray to be the guy to beat Sid, which I think we'd have a hard time convincing Sid to do, but you were thinking Ray US champ.
Yeah, it was just
my
idea was for Ray, Ray US champ, and then I think it was down the line, I think it was going to have a heel Conan feud with him or something like that, just to go against that.
Obviously you have value in Conan as well, but one of the biggest wastes is the Mexican audience for WCW.
I'll tell you what.
Eddie Guerrero, I would do the same thing. I would be like you, where he would have a lengthy reign. I'd probably go more with the United States title that he has.
For
Eddie Guerrero, sorry. At some point now, he has a pretty good solid reign as that. In the long run, years down the line, he's one of the top baby faces in the company. He's like one of the guys. Because like when you're watching Fall Brawl 99, I mean, Kidman's over, yeah. Mysterio's over, yeah. Eddie's just hugely over watching that. And I just always remember that he was always hugely over as soon as he came back from that injury, and just like along with Benoit as well, just thinking like, why is he in the opening match? It's just Eddie Guerrero is such an obvious one. I mean, and this is outside of retrospective, he became WWE champion, we all know this. No, looking at that time period in WCW, looking at him saying, why isn't he higher up the card? Just do it in the right way. He's the one guy you have to do it right, because if you do, money.
Eddie's is so interesting. You talked about the Mexican audience there briefly, Kieran, and because I think Filthy Animals, split them up. I think that there's more value in them all separately. Kibben is going to be where he is around that two title kind of area. Ray, I do think, could be in the US mix. See, the thing is, Carl, you mentioned the whole thing of slow progression. I'm more of the opinion, since we're getting rid of stiffs like Sid, and I would completely downplay Rick Steiner completely. In terms of needing heels, I would be more inclined to move people up quicker. Eddie, you mentioned the Eddie Booker comparison there. To me, Booker, after having a fairly decent stretch 97-98, he'd cooled off quite a bit in 98-99, to the point where most people can't probably tell you anything that he did in 1999. Even from a performance perspective, when I compare Booker and Eddie, and I think, okay, we got to get some hot heels in the mix, I actually would probably keep Guerrero and Conan together as a heel duo. Because I think in terms of a Mexican audience, you got because Guerrero, as good as he wasn't fully there from a personality perspective to the way he would get later on. So I think him as a heel, alongside Conan, who can talk for days, allows Eddie to grow, I would move him up very, very quickly. I'd have Guerrero work with Brett very fast. Because it's a very natural time, in the sense of both from wrestling families, both the star wrestler from the family. In essence, Eddie Guerrero is the Mexican Bret Hart, or he's the Canadian Eddie Guerrero. Very nice parallel there, but obviously, whether it's family legacy, whether it's just the fact that Eddie just creates a reason in his own head to be pissed at Bret, I think that's a good way to just put them both up.
So in the mind of having him as a tandem, would you have him like be like a tag team at some point as
either,
well?
Yeah, or? You could get either or. Whatever the purpose suits, to be perfectly honest.
Because
to the outsiders.
Maybe as like a segue, I know it's probably a little bit cheesy, but you could always do like that's how the Filthy Animals split up and divide. You can do just very initially, just as a way to offset it, is Eddie Guerrero and Conan versus Ray and Billy Kidman. Just offset that. They go on their own route. Ray and Billy shake hands, boom, and they go their separate route.
You can always bring Ray and Kim back as a team, dynamic from there in 99. Yeah. And like I said, with Eddie and Conan, you got the great work. It's in many ways, funnily enough, it's kind of the Los Gringos Locos deal for me, where Guerrero's got so much charisma and he can grow in the role, and Conan can just be the talker, and then he's not great in the ring anyway, so it's better to mask him.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't. You mentioned,
and as long as they're in there with important guys, I think that you can get Eddie hot pretty quick.
We all see value in Conan in one form or another. I personally don't want him anywhere near the ring.
Well, it's not like business then.
I don't want him in the ring because he was hideous by this point. He'd been hideous for a few years before that.
Yes, he was.
So I'm absolutely fine with him as a stick man. No.
Like Hoovy?
As
a third man, yeah. So like Eddie can go solo. Conan's still mouthpiece, but Conan can also work tags with Hoovy. He does all the work.
I mean, that could certainly work if on the basis of, you know, we've broken up the Revolution, we've broken up the Filthy Animals. So,
yeah, so much for that we like stables thing,
so,
by the
so,
way.
But you can have your one group there. I mean, I just wonder about the Eddie Brett match, largely because the one thought I had in my mind is maybe this is sort of rose tinted specs on my part, but Brett's WCW run was so hideous. I mean, even if we take out what comes after the period we're starting with, everything up to that point had been awful, and I would almost want to make it one of my missions to rehab Brett and have a credible strong finish to the last year of his contract. So
I don't feel like a feud with Guerrero could really go to that though.
It could, but the thing is, they'd done nothing meaningful with Brett up to that point, and if you put the two of them together, going from your standpoint of get the guys in there, get them hot quickly, you've got to have Guerrero beat Brett, and I'm not ready for that to happen.
I also think it's not a match to get the most out of. It's not a match you want to do when your company's in transition. Maybe like 6 months' time when you settle down a bit. We've got all these changes going on. Straight away, it'll get lost. There's so much housekeeping to do to get in an overall position where we can start launching these angles. I think you need to get there first to get the most out of Eddie and the Brett thing, and rehabbing Brett is absolutely paramount to doing that, to get the most out of
it. That's the sort of feud that I would want to do 12 months from now.
How far can you rehab Brett anyway, because you're not going to give him the belt? None of us are consistently winning and looking good for a while in feuds that mean something. I mean how far can you really go to this rehabbing Brett?
See, I'm without thinking probably as logistics as much as you guys, I would have Brett with the belt.
Really?
Timing wise,
more so than Steiner.
I think Steiner's the perfect guy to beat the shit out of Brett and take it off him.
So Brett gets, actually somebody did suggest
Brett beats Sting.
Matt actually emailed in and said he would have Brett beat Sting in Toronto at Mayhem, do Hogan versus Brett Starrcade, the match they never had, and of course Brett goes over because that's always so easy to do with Hogan, and then Steiner would beat Brett.
I just think when you're trying to create the environment and world that we need, you know, we need this company needs shaking up and putting into, I think Brett is a perfect guy to be the staple poster boy champion for that, the credible champion while things are settling down, and then and you need time with Steiner, you do want to hot shot him anyway, so yeah, I'd definitely go.
Right. He's got a history of being that guy that a company goes to when they're going through turmoil. So,
and just as a side note, we mentioned there about the Latin market being one that was completely underutilized by the company.
On that same note,
let's talk about Canada.
Yes,
because they signed Brett. They ran two Nitros and two pay-per-views, to the best of my knowledge, in all that time that Brett was under contract. I think there's still some life in Brett. You can rehab him. You can run more shows in Canada where, shock horror, the gates are going to be a bit bigger and a bit more energy-filled crowds, larger crowds. It's going to look better from an optics standpoint as well.
Yeah, I'm kind of somewhere in between with the Eddie Guerrero, Bret Hart idea. I mean, I don't think necessarily it needs to wait 12 months, but I think also you can't go straight into it, so I think probably like 6 months whilst you kind of like, because you're going to need to do that whole thing where you need to split up the Filthy Animals and you need to establish that, and then in the meantime, yeah, I quite like that kind of raw idea of just, you know, the Brett beats Sting and then he defeats Hogan as well before losing it to Steiner, because it kind of puts him a little bit into prominence again before he loses the title. And it's just kind of like, even with a loss like that to Steiner, you can do it in a way where he doesn't look necessarily hugely weak or anything like that. It's just polished the image back up again to make it kind of shine.
Rehab may have been a poor choice of words perhaps on my part, but in terms of the Steiner feud, even with treating Brett better, when the time came for Steiner to take the belt of him, he takes it off him pretty convincingly. And I'm not talking burial, but I'm talking, you know, powers out of the sharpshooter. He beats Brett with the Steiner recliner. Brett Hogan's not happening. Let's just accept it.
I don't think that's scenario.
It's never on the cards. It's not happening at Starrcade.
It does leave us in a bit of a dilemma for our personal route to go down. We'll discuss that at the end, I suppose, which way we're actually going to go after all these ideas are discussed.
The reason that I went with 12 months as my point for it, I want the Canadian passing of the torch with Benoit and Brett first. Because I want Benoit featured more prominently earlier than Guerrero, I want that to happen first, because that's what I use to get Benoit from his heel run into a babyface mode when
Brett
it comes
endorsement.
Time. Yeah, for when it comes time to properly feud with Steiner for the belt.
Lex Luger, who didn't make the round of cuts, but
I tried, folks.
I tried as well, I think.
It was a 50-50 split. Yeah. I see a use in Lex. I don't think that he's going to be a top guy. I think Luger's a funny chicken shit heel.
Did I not fire him?
No, I don't think so.
I think I probably meant to.
Oh, okay. In that case, he's probably not long for the... To me, Luger's a guy who, you know, there's about three or four guys, if we can get it to happen, and he won't get his money if he doesn't in this regime, of people he can put over. Because, like I said, there's a dearth of heels. Have him lose to a few guys, and then you can fuck him off.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Buff Bagwell.
Outside. Outside, lock the fucking door, and Dan, don't tell him we've moved.
Bagwell, I've got nothing for Bagwell at all. He's a babyface at this point, floating around in the middle.
Nah.
And that's where he stays.
How is he like still with the company? Like who voted for him to stay?
No one voted him to go, including you.
Sorry, folks. I have failed this city.
There are guys that I kept on the roster to do jobs and just to serve a purpose in the mid-card, and Bagwell falls in that category.
Kurt Hennig, who is currently in that position that you just mentioned, Carl, guy in the middle with the West Texas rednecks, they're kind of over in a humorous way. Kurt did not have a very good 98, but he was a little bit revitalised in 99. I thought he was having some better showings in 99. Obviously, he seemed to get quite into the whole West Texas rednecks angle and the rappers crap. But where do you see Kurt's place?
I've got the tour t-shirt. The West Texas Rednecks as a group can ride off into the sunset. I've got some sway here. I've got a pen. I can make some decisions. I'm keeping Kurt around, and you know, he'll have some wins in the mid-card. He'll be used to get individuals that I'm ready to push further up the card. He'll be there to do the favours for them, but I certainly keep him in the company in not too dissimilar a position, but with a more serious role.
Yeah, I'd definitely get rid of the rednecks kind of faction, unfortunately. I mean, I might probably stretch to maybe a bit of a tag run with him and Jarrett, I don't know. But my opinion is definitely keep him around, just because I'm a perfect mark. So I'm going to keep him around as kind of, I don't like using the term utility guy, but he's basically going to be around in that US division or maybe TV, where like I need him to get like a new guy over or just have like a really good solid feud. Maybe like if I decide to have him as a heel, you know, maybe he could have a pretty solid feud with Mysterio. I don't know, over the title, you know, just be that guy. Like when I need someone
Ray
who's
Kidman,
good,
those guys
get perfect in.
Yeah. Oh, Kidman's not looting. Kidman's not beating Kurt.
Interesting one here. Berlin. Because Berlin was a guy who they just started, and I liked the Berlin character at first. The music, the look, the refusing to speak English, the interpreter, the silent bodyguard, who they did put way too much focus on, but at this point it was okay. They'd had the atrocious match at Four Brawl with him and Duggan, where Duggan was just a bitch. Exhibit 1A for why he's fired in our little realm here. Yeah. But Berlin, do you see this really going anywhere? Do you think they could do more with it than they actually did?
Do they at any actual point mention, like, oh shit, that's actually Alex Wright?
They did. They mentioned that it was Alex Wright before the character properly debuted, because they showed him in the front row on Nitro for a couple of weeks running. They soon dropped it and forgot about it, and it was never mentioned again until he came back as part of the Boogie Nights.
Yeah.
But,
not just like pretend like, oh, we've never seen this guy before, but just kind of actually reference the fact that he was Alex Wright before. He was like this clean cut guy, and now he's come out dressed like this. It's like, what's the motivation? Why has he changed? Like, why has he actually changed and actually address something like that? And just because there's actual intrigue in there, where like someone who was like a clean cut guy is now just suddenly got like, is it a mohawk? It's a weird fucking hairdo with shades. He's German.
Yeah, he had a lot of
shades, and he's speaking in German and stuff. It's like, why has he suddenly just become disgruntled with with the company. I thought it would have been, at least for an introduction anyway, it would have been interesting to find out what exactly made him change. Just to add some background to him.
It's an incredibly easy promo for the interpreter to do. Mistreated in a US company. I don't want to go too much on the old, you know, the immigrant argument by any means, but, you know, over the first couple of weeks.
On that note, though, where do you see the ceiling for him?
Why put a ceiling on him? I think
I'm not saying there is. I'm just saying where do you actually see him slotting in right now?
Okay. Well, it's not a ceiling. I'd slot him in mid-card-ish, and then you've got all these. There's plenty of guys there he can be beating doing the US angle.
Yeah,
loads of guys. It doesn't have to be affecting any title at this point. And if it clicks, then we can move him up and shatter the ceiling that you want to put in place for him there, old.
I don't want to put a ceiling in place for him. I just want to know with a character like this during this period. I think there is a lot of potential with something like this. If it clicks, run with it.
Yeah, I think it's one of the things you can. No, his feud is about his gimmick. And
yeah, so, it's completely separate from everybody
else. Yeah, absolutely.
Else,
and that's how I'd have him.
I mean, yeah, I certainly wouldn't put a ceiling on him, but, like, I mean, this, just to rub it in. I probably initially, depending on what happens to him, kind of like in the long run, I'd probably have him in that United States division. I know we've talked about, like, what our use for the TV title would be, and that it would kind of, like, pseudo bring
talked
in.
About the, your use for the TV
title. Yeah, for the TV titles that we're going to have Carl booking for us. And, basically, the fact that we're going to obviously kind of, like, probably see it at least initially. Maybe Berlin has a run with that belt first before he moves up to the United States. Because
I wouldn't personally do that.
Put a belt on.
It's fair. No, he doesn't need a belt. He's absolutely belts for guys who, like Eddie and Benoit, for me anyway, who are going to win every week. Berlin doesn't need a belt. If he clicks and he gets over and the steam behind him, then US title is the most natural thing, a la Rusev. But doesn't need a belt.
Yes, so about this ceiling, Liam. There's not really much more I can add to that. I'd go along with the notion of you put him in the mid-card, you let him get some wins, have the interpreter cut a couple of promos on his behalf and just see how it goes. If it does catch on as you think it would, we can go further with it. If it doesn't, you know, there's no harm done. He hasn't beaten anyone that we think is going to be severely damaged going forward, so, you know. See how sort of, you know, nothing ventured, nothing gained. Try it. If it doesn't work out, it's not a mortal wound to the company. Yeah.
You don't have him lose to Brad Armstrong at the next pay-per-view like fucking Russo did. So anyway, a couple more guys, very quickly. Steven Regal, who'd been doing nothing of merit at this period of time. He was a year away from being the...
He'd been doing a lot of drugs, if I'm not mistaken.
Had he been to rehab yet, or was that to come? My Regal timeline's a little bit off here.
I think this was before rehab, okay. I think. It's a bit of a difficult one. I personally keep him...
Because you want to put him in the mix more than he is, you know?
Yeah.
Knowing what he's capable of.
Yeah. I suppose I've got to bite the bullet here. If we're keeping the TV title, that's the sort of area I put Regal in. But I have him being always a perennial challenger for that belt, maybe the occasional run with it.
And the final one I want to mention here very, very quickly, because he was getting a lot of TV time at the time, is Ernest Miller, the Cat.
Oh, well, fucking hell.
Well,
you're not a fan of the red slippers.
Yeah, I tried to fucking max him.
He wasn't on my cut list, but he probably gets slightly less TV time than he's currently getting, in truth. Let's get away from this notion of we have to do something with every guy.
No, absolutely.
Let's be clear, because I'm not saying that you're doing that, Jeep, but if we go down that path, it gets to Russo thinking of, well, you've got to do something for everyone. The biggest Russo defense, it was always, he gave everyone a storyline. Well, that's why the storylines didn't fucking matter, because everybody had one. If everybody's got one, then the ones that are supposed to be special aren't special.
Yeah,
let's get away from this theory that everyone has to have a storyline. Important people have to have storylines. The people that we want to make important have to have storylines. The rest of the people can float around and trade a few wins and losses until we see fit to change it.
I just want to know if anybody thought it was important, Carl.
All I say is that we're not, because I did watch WCW in 2000. Unfortunately for me,
you're the one.
Yeah, I know, and he was the fucking worst thing on that show when I was watching Worldwide.
As commissioner.
Just everything. Is this sheer existence on the show?
You didn't like the Young Dragons run-ins? With the music that only he could hear? Yeah.
Stevie G, 1980 from the UK Fan Forum, says the only way to go forward was youth and ECW poaching. But make the signings count. Don't just bring in Mike Awesome because you can, have him appear with that build-up. Don't have Chuck Palumbo appear to superkick Lex Luger, where nobody apart from Saturday Night viewers know who he is. build slowly. The war is pretty much lost, so start again and try not to lose your current audience. Oh, and keep Mark Madden away from commentary. Pretty much agree. There's not, we haven't mentioned signings at all, because I think it's kind of hard to kind of talk about people who are under contract elsewhere, so kind of stay, you know, stayed away from that.
Call it grooming, call it poaching, whatever you want. I'm starting negotiations for Brock Lesnar right now.
If you're running this thing, Lesnar, had he won the NCAAs yet? He hadn't, had he? He won it in 2000, I think, right? So there you go. He'd been signed very, very quickly by WWF. There's actually a bidding war. We were trying to get him at the time.
You know how we get him? We dangle Sable in front of him when she has the lawsuit with Vince.
Crowbro from F4W says, I always let the Mayhem 99 tourney for the belt. Book it with a little more forethought and have it end at Super Brawl.
If you're going to do it, you book it with a hell of a lot more thought. Not a little, a lot. But I stick with the premise of, we're a US company, we by and large don't do tournaments very well. If you're going to do one, you cut it down to a maximum of 8 people.
Mad Dog from Pro Wrestling Only says, we focus on Ric Flair in a face role for the company leading the Horsemen. At the same time, push Bret Hart, Benoit, Guerrero, Goldberg, Steiner, Jarrett, and Booker T as your main event guys. Overhaul the announce team. I don't think Joey Styles was necessarily the answer. I might have promoted Scott Hudson to being the main announcer and use Kevin Nash as the Nitro Color guy. Stevie Ray stays, obviously, I guess, in this color commentary. Neither Nash nor Stevie Ray really did it for me on commentary, as goofy and funny as they both were. He also says, I would have bought every moderate name in from the Indies and kept anyone that connected to the crowd. Reckless Youth, American Dragon, Chris Daniels, etc. Do a Young Lions tournament and see what you get. I would have also bought the Luchadors back and gotten back to having those crazy six-mans on Nitro each week. I would approach Rob Van Dam and pretty much hand him a blank check to jump from ECW. So there was talent in ECW to bring in, but I'm not sure if that actually would have gone that time. Is that strange loyalty?
If you handed Van Dam a blank check, he wouldn't write on it. He'd just use it as a fucking...
roll it on
it! Use it as a skin and smoke.
It's worth remembering at this point in time as well that ECW aren't that far into their TV deal
shit
with TNM. No, but it's still got that sort of that sense of, oh, we're building something here, we've just signed the deal with TNM, so people aren't necessarily as eager to jump ship, and the chicks aren't bouncing with the same consistency that they would be in, say, sort of 6 to 8 months.
Yeah. Verbatim 17 from WrestleInform says, it is important to note they created a new set for 2000, but it also seemed like a downgrade from the one they used in 99. I think this downgrade contributed to the bad atmosphere in WCW in 2000. They weren't wrong in having a new set and theme for Nitro and a new logo for the company, but they should have saved them for the first Nitro of 2000. From there, you could start pushing the new faces. The tournament that had culminated at Mayhem wasn't a bad idea, but it probably could have been saved for a little later. And the running DQ finishes in the main event. The great main event matches were ruined because of how the match ended, and it was a major turnoff when it came to watching WCW. So, touching on what you said earlier on, Kieran. Noid from TBWW says, I seem to remember people being quite optimistic about the cruiserweights, even around this time, and the mid-card divisions and such. I guess Scott Stein would have made a great choice for the top heel to spotlight. I'm not sure who would have made a great babyface to focus on. However, was Benoit at the time? We mentioned earlier on that we think that Benoit is pretty much good to go, and he'd probably be the first guy we really, other than Stein, that we're trying to bump up that isn't already up there.
I'd go with that, yeah.
We're going to have probably a bit of a split opinion here on whether we should be a heel or a face when we kind of break down. Overbooked from Pro Wrestling Only, there's an apropos name. I'd boil it down to sort out the finances, stop the massive overspending and work towards balancing the books, and make the product less of an embarrassment, more of a good corporate fit. The AOL Time Warner merger was on the horizon. WCW needs to seem like an attractive, potentially profitable and low maintenance product, either for whichever corporate structure ended up in, or to make it appeal to other corporate structures to maybe invest in it. WCW could have had the best booking in the history of the world, but if the finances weren't right, its days were numbered anyway. I'm not sure a hot product would be enough to shore up the company. Might be enough to stop losing money, though, so hopefully we can do that.
It sort of goes, they go hand in hand with each other, don't they? A better product leads to more money, leads to less likeliness of being pulled by Jamie Kellner.
Yeah, I agree completely. Really Big Shoe from UK Fan Forum says, leave Vinnie Roux and Ed Ferrara at the WWF. Don't try and outdo the WWF. Let WCW work their niche. Be the alternative for fans who might not like the Attitude Era type product. Focus on Monday Nitro. Gradually reintroduce talent each week, so a Kurt Hennig turning up on Nitro would be a big deal as fans wouldn't have seen him for months, and use the New Japan talent agreement more effectively. They did really kind of piss that New Japan thing away. Now the guys like Jushin Liger doing the old tequila bottle over the head when Vinnie Roux got there. That's pretty wretched. Not J Tab from Pro Wrestling Only says, I also think that rather than try and lure away the WF audience, WCW needed to consolidate the audience they had. They still had millions of viewers who were tuning into Nitro because they weren't fans of what the WWF was offering, which was a lot of character work, but one of the worst in-ring years in the company's history. You can see how much the company started to lose popularity when Russo turned it into WWF Lite, and in October 99, WCW still had a great roster in the mid-card. You can use guys like Hogan to make him a special attraction. The bottom line is, WCW need to accept being number two. There's no shame being Pepsi rather than Coke. Try and run a real business and try and keep the existing fan base happy.
On the subject of a war, WCW didn't win up to that point, and we know they wouldn't for the rest of the year or until the end of their existence, but if I'm not mistaken, throughout all of 99, they didn't win a single week.
Fraser B from the UK Fan Forum here says the key had to be patience, though, which just wasn't the mentality in the company. Regardless what they did, business would probably have kept falling well into 2000 until things started to bed and settle. Unfortunately, if the ratings didn't turn around the next week, they had to hotshot something else. An interesting point, because WCW, obviously, it's on the downward slope anyway. Do you think it's salvageable in the sense of, do you think that they can actually stop this fall? Because of the thing, again, we mentioned it before, WCW was the uncool promotion. It's a very difficult thing to overcome.
When you initially mentioned this idea to me, probably been about a couple of months ago, mm-hmm. something like that, and we hadn't talked about doing it as sort of any sort of booking committee about who we would keep and who we it was just our, in a sense of our general thoughts on what could possibly save the company, just generally speaking. And I'd pretty much made up my mind at that point that if we were ever going to do this podcast, I would be the voice that would say, you can't save this company. By this point, I genuinely don't think it can be saved. Because there is an awful lot of talent there, don't get me wrong. But the time that you would need and the patience that you would need, as that emailer referenced, is not going to be afforded to you. You are going to lose somewhere in the region of 15 million still at the end of that year. Now, you can have a company that certainly doesn't produce a loss of, what was it, 83 million the yeah. following year. You can certainly mitigate those losses, don't get me wrong. But at the end of the day, Jamie Kellner's still coming in in 2001 and seeing a company that has lost a shitload of money, that advertisers still don't want to pay the rate for, and will ultimately make the decision to pull the plug.
Okay, you weren't the only one to think this, obviously. We'll get to this now. I've saved this for the end of the discussion, pretty much. The people who thought that it just can't work. Bad News Gertner from TPWW says, it was beyond repair at that point. They could have rebuilt Goldberg and pushed younger talent, but it wouldn't have made a difference. History has shown that Vince has momentum, and when he does, he's pretty much unstoppable. You're only delaying the death. Ian Drew Dice Clay from the UK Fan Forum says, I watched that year back last year, and I wanted to punch everyone who wasn't the Jersey Triad. Master P, Kiss, Chad Brock, DJ Cunting Ran, and that knob jockey from MTV that showed up, Ricky Wankface, or whatever his name was.
Ricky Rackman.
Ricky Rackman, I believe is what she's talking about. Matthew Alan Hanso from TPWW says, the crippling losses were set before that with bloated guaranteed contracts. It was too late by then. They would have had no chance to make money and stay viable. Stephen Maniac from the Wrestling Forum says, the backstage and corporate politics were inevitably going to kill WCW, regardless of what creative decisions were made or who was in charge of booking. In all honesty, the only way WCW would have been salvageable as a October 99 is if a group of investors had come along and purchased WCW while they still had enough cachet and value left to get a TV deal with another network. Johnny Guitar from Pro Wrestling Only says, Bill Watts and Eric Bischoff are polar opposites in their views on wrestling, but both agree that their first major move should have been to fire most of the office and production staff. Without a solid and capable staff in place, everything else suffered throughout WCW's history. And King of Sports from the UK Fan Forum wraps this up and says, could it be saved? Yes, probably. But I see a parallel with TNA over the past 2 or 3 years, in so much as you can reach a stage, and this usually only happens when it's dismal show after dismal show for months on end, where people no longer care about the product, and nothing you do from there on is going to make a difference.
So in your mind then, Carl, even with our best efforts, how long do you think that company has then? Do you think it's until the Time Warner sale?
I want to get away from this Time Warner argument, because it's one that grates on me to this day.
It pisses me off. I heard so many people replied and said, oh, it doesn't matter because they're going to cut it anyway.
No, exactly. That's the point. The right ideas can probably bring the company a stay of execution. The argument that I'm trying to make is not that the Time Warner deal ultimately meant that WCW was fucked either way. too many people use that as a convenient excuse because they want to blame Jamie Kellner and say, oh, Jamie Kellner didn't like wrestling, so he was going to cut it anyway. If the company's making a profit, he's not fucking cutting it. Let's be clear about that. The argument I'm making is, for the company to be saved, we have to be turning a profit by 2001. And I think with the best will in the world, with the best ideas in the world, the company is on such a downward slope, it's going to take so long to turn it around that we're not going to be afforded the time we need. And Nash used this argument when he was doing his interview with Scott Hudson about how they took us off TV when we were doing mid twos to threes and replaced us with a film that was only would do a two on its best day. The issue is not the rating itself. The issue is what the advertisers are willing to pay for that time slot.
And also the fact that they were taking the money that they were losing was their company's money.
Yeah. So you've
doesn't
got,
help.
So you've got a company losing money, which is you're absolutely right. It's that's the biggest issue. The company's losing money. You then combine that with advertisers that already have, right, wrong or otherwise, they have an idea in mind about what a wrestling fan is and what they like. And as such, they're not willing to spend the money to purchase the advertising time. It wouldn't have mattered what it was. It could have been anything. If it's making such a loss to that extent, he's cutting the program.
I'm wondering, though, like you said, I think much more than the $15 million loss, it's the next year's loss that, to me, is the big red, the big fucking, what the hell is this? We're not keeping this policy. And that was a year filled with completely reckless spending from Russo and Bischoff to try and get things on track.
Okay.
So I think there's ways by just, like you said, we've cut the roster drastically, we're keeping this core, we're not buying limousines to wreck, we're not doing these fucking stupid matches in a graveyard that cost $50,000.
No celebrities.
Yeah, exactly.
All very, very true, very accurate. But the biggest contracts that are the biggest issue and the biggest hindrance on a regular basis, they're the locked in stone contracts that we can't do anything about. They're just going to bleed the company dry until they expire. So there's nothing we can do about those. And let me ask the question to all of you. Can the company turn a profit by the end of 2000?
I certainly think with the ideas in place, and I think even with half our efforts, we wouldn't lose as much money as they did in 2000. I don't think we would be able to turn a profit in 2000.
I don't think we would make fucking $83 million in losses. I'm
I couldn't
I'm,
lose that much money by trying.
I'm quite
drink a lot of beer, but
I'm quietly confident we would certainly save more than that. Do you genuinely believe? Okay, we're not going to make we're not going to lose $83 million. Do you think we can turn it around quickly enough to lose less than $15 million the following year?
I do. I absolutely do. It's Kieran, but I absolutely do.
Yeah, same here.
I just think the problem with this company is it's still in the mindset, and actually is in this Monday Night War, is still going on. And I totally believe that we need to get out of it to stop the rot. You can't stop your citizens dying if you're still sending them over the top, kind of thing, you know? So in that respect, you need to get off Mondays. You need to get away from head-to-head competition. But what that does is going to hurt you. How is that going to hurt your product in the short term, i.e. the next year?
Which is where you need.
Exactly. So it's really a catch-22. And it's not even the prestige as viewed from the outside. It's that, you remember, it all goes back to when they went head-to-head, the Bischoff story, they went head-to-head. What does it take for me to beat Vince McMahon? By moving off, you're admitting to your own company, you can't beat them. Now, the question is, are they happy to accept you still alive, not competing, but maybe growing? So in 2 years, so maybe in 12 months time we're breaking even again in the fantasy world, in 2 years time maybe we're turning a slight profit. Are the people behind you, do they have the mindset to keep the company alive? If not, if backing out of the war is an absolute no-no, it's going to die. I think I've said it before, as soon as they went head-to-head, so as long as they kept doing it, one was destined to die. But if you pull away from that, are you in the short term cutting your legs off so much for a company that's already on the downward spiral? Is it just the wrong time to change it, and that's just going to be it going to speed up the process?
To me, this is an interesting year, because 2000 to me is the tale of it can go either way. With the state that we're in right now, and this is why this has made such a fascinating discussion for me, it can go, it's the 1990s, the WWF 1997 for WCW, if you see what I'm saying. It was the year where they had to find, they had a year to find their way. Vince was, you know, by the end of 97, Vince was having money problems. They had to find their way during this year. WCW has about a year, and the timeline spoke for itself in real life, to get to where they needed to be, and they went the complete wrong way. I think this, what, you know, the ideas will kick around. I think that's enough to keep it at a steady level.
Two questions.
And to keep it at a steady level then gives you the ability and the platform to get hot again, and that's when maybe the house shows and the pay-per-views can come back up, and you can make that money.
All things being equal, could we create a profitable pro wrestling company with the resources we have at hand with WCW at this point? Absolutely. I think we can all agree on that, for fuck's sake.
Oh, yeah.
But in reality, is the downward momentum, and when one company's going absolute hell for leather and just killing it and gonna, realistically, probably not.
My idea of this thing of, like, even if we just do it a little bit less than 15, it might give us a state of execution. I mean, that is still riding on hopes and dreams, like we're in a never-ending story, because it's just like, because it's still at the end of the day, when you're looking at, when you're looking at the company still turning around and say, yes, okay, you've stopped the rot a little bit, you've lost less, but you've still lost 8 million this year. You know, it's still 8 million.
So there's the door.
There's the door. So it is a very kind of like, you know, pie in the sky kind of thought process. It would be nice to think that maybe if we were media savvy, like probably Bischoff was years earlier, where we could probably convince him, like, hey, I know we're losing
Bischoff's
money.
Bischoff's not
the
as
moment.
Media savvy as Bischoff thinks he
well,
is.
He got a job, you know, but it's just like,
he lost that job.
Yeah, he lost the job, yeah, when he proved he was shit. But like, if we were able to convince him enough to say, like, just give us a state of execution, that, please forgive us for the 8 million, but it will get less.
I just keep coming back to this point of, I genuinely don't believe we would be afforded much time than what they got in real life.
No, we wouldn't. I think the time, said, that timeline to me is set no matter what.
And that's why I don't think it can be said, because we simply just don't have enough time to do
in
it.
In the words of Don West, we don't have time. We've kicked around ideas, we've heard what the listeners have to say. Final opinions around the table for what we're actually going to fucking do to try and help WCW. Booking by committee, it's always a fun thing to do,
yeah,
I know.
I'm booked by committee, so I'm going home now.
Well, the best we can. What are we doing with this? We're keeping Sting babyface. We've agreed on that. The belt's going to Scott Steiner eventually. We're all agreed on that round the table.
Yeah.
It's going to Scott Steiner.
But,
to,
but Brett and Goldberg might have it at some point as
well.
Well,
this is the thing.
Okay, let's be clear. There's a bit of conjecture on whether or not Brett gets it in between Sting and Steiner, but I thought we were all in general agreement that Steiner gets it and we build to Goldberg.
Okay, yeah. Agreement there.
Yeah.
Benoit heel or face?
Kieran has done a good job selling me on Benoit's heel, so I'm going with heel.
Face.
Oh fuck. Oh god. Because in my own head, I think he fits better as a babyface, but, and he had the momentum as a babyface.
You'd have to ruin that momentum just to turn him heel. When you can do.
Well, it depends. If you turn him on. Depends how you do it. It could be great. He'll have arm there.
You could turn him on Brett. It all comes full circle eventually.
But the thing is, at the same time, though.
Yeah.
We're talking restricted timelines.
Brett can't get the belt. But at the same time, if you're building Scott Steiner. Benoit's what you're going to build both of them at the same time. Benoit will be second tier to Scott, surely.
He's going
to
be anyway.
Well, at least if he's babyface, you can try and build him as the new top babyface.
I don't think you're going to build him as your top babyface when you've got Goldberg there, no matter what. I think Goldberg is the top babyface. I think Goldberg, to me, this is one of the consensus things. I think Goldberg is the way forward for the next year until it just stops working, I guess.
The company dies.
Goldberg's the guy to
that. Which is going to happen. So.
And I like the idea of Benoit versus Goldberg. I like the idea of Benoit versus Steiner. We're breaking up the Filthy Animals. Revolution's breaking up. We know that much. We're going to keep Malenko and Saturn as heels as a tag team, managed by Douglas, pretty much.
With the belts, I'm going for.
With the belts. US champ, where's that going? US title. Is that going with Benoit or are we going with Mysterio?
Mysterio.
Benoit for me.
Benoit for me.
Ooh,
I'll go Mysterio.
Yeah!
Thank you.
How the fuck do we solve that one?
Fight.
Oh no, they're co-holders.
So I don't book my committee, goddammit.
They're co-holders. This is the issue with WCW booking my committee, I see.
Yeah. Just tell them they're both getting the belts and let them fight about it.
Let them feud for the belt.
Yeah.
Cut it in half.
Ah, I like that.
There you go.
Match with two belts.
all of a sudden that 83 million loss is looking a bit more likely.
We should try, but can we lose more money? That's not
That's a pretty good idea. I think that in terms of general direction, we pretty much we're all fairly much on the same page. We've got kind of different. I think Benoit and Mysterio are the two anchors of the US title, at least for now. I've still got that nagging urge to get guys up sooner. I think that it's needed more urgently. I guess we're gonna have Steiner move up, so that's the big thing. So in terms of general direction, Goldberg and Steiner the direction. Sting and the Outsiders are probably getting phased down. We're going to try and rehab Brett, but the focus is on Guerrero, Benoit, Booker, Mysterio, the guys that probably should have gone. Let's
Flair's
be honest.
Time.
Flair is the president. Nice, simple structure.
Well, if you're going in short term with the 1 year before we're fucked anyway, we ain't got time to go to Brett, I don't think. So
I agree.
So go put Brett around the US with Benoit to start with. Make that belt actually mean something, because I don't want the world title depending on Nitro every week.
I don't want the world title defending on Nitro at all.
Oh, there you go.
I like that. That's enough to sway me on Benoit as a heel. Yeah. Keep the Jersey Triad together, I think, is a good act in the middle.
Yeah, good heel.
So on the top heels, we've got Scott Steiner, the Jersey Triad, Chris Benoit, Booker T's moving on up in the world, Lex Luger's floating around there somewhere.
Eddie
Conan and Hooventude as a group I go with.
Yeah, that's not bad.
All right, so we've got that. On the babyface side, Mysterio's there. We've got Kidman, who's kind of hanging around that TV belt. The Cruiserweight title's gone. Sorry, Carl. And Hogan is gone. There's no plans for Hogan from what we've mentioned.
Hogan.
We're keeping Hall and Nash utility guys until we can fuck them off and make an example.
Hall and Nash are gone. Hall and Nash are gone.
After the discussion of 83 million, let's keep him around to sit in the crowd and do a promo once in a while. Fucking fired, boys. And the rest of you better shape up, you're gone too.
Hall and Nash are gone, and Hogan's gone after Steiner beats the shit out of him, unless he agrees to come back and do the job.
Which you'll then use as creative control clause to get out of on the day.
So he'll go anyway. Fuck it. Steiner beats the shit out of him. We never see him again.
Rest in peace, Hulkamania. And on that enlightening note, thank you very much for listening. If we didn't get to your feedback this time, I apologise. Again, join us next week. We're doing the trial of Paul Heyman, our fourth trial in the Square Circle Gazette series, as we put him on trial for the charge of his booking being more of a detriment than a positive for the wrestling business long term. We want your thoughts on this, your witness statement, so email them to scgradio@hotmail.com. If you like the format of this show, the booking meeting format, again, email us, let us know. Make suggestions for the future, we'll be happy to do them. Kieran O'Rourke, I know you're going to be on the prosecution for that one. There's a lot of interesting points that you can raise for that. So that's going to be
interesting. Ahmed Johnson, Paulie, you go down!
Much like WCW. Thank you very much for listening. We tried our best to salvage it. Let us know what you think. For G. John Chase.
Show me a home where the buffalo roams, and I'll show you a house full of cow shit.
For Carl Jones.
I'm going to go fish the cruiserweight title out of the bin.
And for Kieran O'Rourke.
You going down.
I am Liam O'Rourke. We are out of here. Thank you for listening.